I call the April 6th meeting of the Board of Supervisors to order. We'll begin with the Pledge of Allegiance, followed by a moment of silence.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you very much. Okay, Mr. Dahl, any changes?
Yeah, just a couple of things. just for a quick discussion. One, under unfinished business, there's a potential funding opportunity for the Zion's Crossroads waterline extension. So I just wanted to follow up with the board on that. And then under new business, there's a letter there from the Department of Social Services to me regarding the budget. So just follow up on those items.
Do we have a closed session?
We will have a closed session. And then we have the 7 p.m. work session as well.
Yes, and I was on top of that one. Yep. Zion Crossroads, waterline extension.
Yep.
What is that? New business?
Yes, ma'am.
I don't think what I want to talk about is new business, but it's health.
Yes.
And let's see what else. Voucher programs. Transportation. Just to start a discussion. Not that long.
Yeah, I've got an idea, but I want to talk about it. It'll be a closed session, though. Alrighty, do we have an adoption of the agenda with the changes so made?
I move that we adopt the agenda with the changes made.
Alrighty, do I have a second?
Second.
Alrighty, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Eager. Alrighty.
So with Moselle, what you were saying, you said you have some items you want us to discuss that aren't on the agenda, is that what you're saying?
It's not.
Just want to bring it up on the new business.
Yeah. Okay.
And put it on the radar.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And you said it was?
Health, transportation, voucher.
So when will you discuss that?
Under new business.
Tonight, then?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
There'll be no action necessarily. No. It's just a discussion.
All right, Mr. Dahl.
Yes, Mr. Chairman, members of the board. Actually, had to trim back a little bit. I had a lot of things to report, a lot of things happening here recently. So one, we got some new county staff members. Alan Davis started as the assistant registrar in the registrar's office, starting on March 28th. William Ross started as family services specialist for Department of Social Services, started March 28th. And then Rachel Brewster started as the financial services technician for accounts payable in the finance office, and she started on April 4th. Just kind of give the community a heads up. So VDOT's bridge crew is preparing construction of the Route 639 bridge over South Fork Cunningham Creek. Construction is scheduled to begin April 4th and will last approximately 6 weeks. So Long Acre Road will be closed throughout the duration of this, and they're not going to be putting out any formal detour here.
You got to drive on about a mile and a half. We went, of course, on the 4th, we went down it in the driver's car.
Yeah, and they'll be putting up some message boards just informing the public, but there's going to be no formal detours or anything like that. And like I said, it's scheduled the last 6 weeks. The library has been busy. The library, I gave out grab-and-go tiny art kits to anyone ages 10 and up that wanted one, and they asked them to create a tiny piece of art and return it to the Fluvanna County's library for a tiny art show. The tiny art show will begin at the library on Monday, March 21st through April 16th, so it's been going on currently. So please stop by and check out all of the tiny talented artists in Fluvanna County, and that's sponsored by the Friends of the Library. Also, again at the library. They had their first story time pig roundup after some great stories about pigs. Everyone participated in a pig roundup. So kids are having a good time, and Ms. Hoffman's doing a lot of great things, you know, getting some summer programming and, well, spring, and kind of gearing up for summer programming again. And also, Fluvanic High School's SGA team for Hands-On Fluvanna to help the library set up a mini golf course for spring break. The golf course will be available for everyone to play during all library hours next week. So they've got kind of some cardboard boxes, and they set up a little kind of a putt-putt mini golf course for those that come in and test their golf skills out. For social services, certainly looking for individuals of the community to be foster care parents. So Fluvanna County Department of Social Services is looking for nurturing, patient, and understanding community members to become foster families. Help us keep our children in our home community. Training and support is provided. Anyone wanting more information can contact Allison Pace at 434-842-8221. So the control burn, also known as a prescribed burn at Pleasant Grove Park, occurred on March 30th, 2022. And if you're looking at the map on the left here, right here, the blue line right in front of here, that's 53. Here's the entrance into Pleasant Grove Park. The thick orange outlined area is the meadow that the control burn happened. The control burn was performed by Chuck Wright of the Virginia Department of Forestry, and he had 8 other local foresters come out to help. The meadow burn started at around just before noon and took approximately 3 hours. You can see here, there's just some pictures of the burn and kind of what they did. Like I said, again, they had a lot of their burn. A lot of the dozer areas already kind of put in place, so that would help the fire from not spreading where they didn't want it to go. And just as a quick little, I think there might be a little video here. Let me see here. You can just kind of see what they went through. But again, it was a pretty quick thing, and you know, nothing smoldered or lasted that long. I think there was one little log that lasted a little bit, but everything went through pretty quick without a hitch. So you know, they have to have just the absolute right conditions when they do that regarding humidity, wind, and all that. So again, you know, the meadow will be flourishing right before you know it. Also, the butterfly garden has been without water since it was installed. Water had to be brought in for plants to grow. So thanks to Public Utilities, Roger Smith and Greg Sawyer, for getting this project completed on March 4th. They came out with mini excavator and extended the water line to where it needed to go. Again, you know, good job by county staff to kind of do something that, you know, sometimes we'd normally have to have a contract crew come in and do. Also at Pleasant Grove Park, the Rotary Club of Fluvanna wanted to do a project with Parks and Rec to benefit the community. So the Rotary Club purchased materials, installed a parking lot at the disc golf course with help of FUMA's Interact Club, and they did that on March 26, 2022. There are also future plans for the Rotary Club to install a kiosk next to the parking lot for disc golf information. You can see some pictures there of them laying down the gravel, putting up the border, and kind of the right pictures, kind of the finished product of the little parking pad, the gravel parking pad. Fluvanna County will have our Earth Day tire drop-off event Saturday, April 23rd. That's going to be from 10 a.m. to noon at Pleasant Grove Park. Proof of Fluvanna County residency is required. Must present a valid ID. Again, arrive early because there's limited collection capacity. And again, when trucks are full, the event will close. All tires must be off rims, no tractor tires, no big rig tires. And again, this is not for electronics or hazardous waste. And you can't be a commercial vendor coming in with a semi-truck full of tires or anything like that. It's just for households. And it's, again, usually someone coming in with a pickup truck at most is kind of the capacity for what we will take. Is that correct, Mr. Spitzer?
12 tires. 3 cars.
Yep. Thank you. Also coming up in April, Flavanna Parks and Rec will be the annual Easter egg hunt in Pleasant Grove, Saturday, April 12th at 10 a.m. Arrive early and bring your basket. This is a free event open to ages 12 and younger. The hunt will begin promptly at 10 a.m. And I think if you're not there at 10:02 a.m., you're probably going to be out of luck for getting Easter eggs. It's a pretty fast and furious event, so make sure you're there right on time. It's a 16th?
It's the
16th. 16th, okay.
Yeah.
Correction, April 16th. Saturday, April 16th at 10 a.m. Thank you. In the month of April, there's a drive-through rabies clinic. Saturday, April 30th, from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m. It's going to be at Pleasant Grove Park again. So the cost is $10 per animal, cash only. So pre-registration forms must be filled out and returned in advance. They can also be picked up at the FSPCA. Like I said, owners and their pets must remain in the vehicles. Dogs on leashes and cats must be in individual carriers. And again, they'll usually have a good flow and good directional traffic flow for those coming to the park for the drive-through rabies clinic.
Mm-hmm. How do they test it?
I'm sorry?
How do they test it, you know?
When you say test
it. The clinic, how do they test whether an animal has rabies?
No, this is to prevent rabies.
Okay, so what are they doing with the animals when you come to it?
They'll be giving them a shot.
A shot.
Yeah,
a shot.
Rabies. Yeah, rabies shot.
Just one shot.
Yeah, rabies shot. Okay. Monday night? The EDA pitch competition, Flavanna County Economic Development Authority held a pitch competition on April 4th. So five businesses completed a 16-week entrepreneurship program. Plus an additional entrepreneur certificate program through scholarships from the EDA and the Community Investment Collaborative. There are prizes for this pitch competition for first and second place, $5,000 for first place, $3,000 for second place. Judges included CIC representative Shannon Beach and also supervisors Ms. Booker and Mr. Fairchild. The event was made possible by Charlottesville Area Community Foundation grant and the EDA that they received in 2021. First place was Erica Mitchell of Sweetheart Emporium, and second place was Eric Agee with Agee Services. And like I said, Mrs. Booker and Mr. Fairchild were both there, and you know, we had some good entrepreneurs in our community, and you know, it was a good way for them to kind of show off what they want to do and how they want to expand and use of the funds. And I think it was a good pitch competition that they had. And then just kind of lastly, upcoming meetings. So next week, April 13th at 7 p.m., we have a Board of Supervisors special meeting. And again, it's just for the public hearing for the FY23 budget and the calendar year 22 tax rate. And then April 20th at 7 p.m., we have the regular meeting where the board, you know, regular meeting plus the board will adopt the fiscal year 23 budget and the calendar year 22 tax rate. Should the board not adopt the budget on April 20th, we've got a placeholder follow-up meeting April 27th. But like I said, that's there only on the worst case scenario. Happy to answer any questions that the board has this evening.
No questions? Thank you very much.
Unrelated to this, but I do have some questions. Maybe I can save it for new business later. You think?
If it's something you want to bring up brand new, yeah, let's just save it like we're doing with other stuff.
If it's informational, then you wouldn't have to. So just like lay it or something.
Well, just a couple things. One, our county website is not up to date. And for example, Don Weaver is still shown as the supervisor for
in perpetuity
yeah, after 32 years.
Exactly.
It's not enough to name a building after. A citizen contacted me saying that we're unclear of where the
which district they fell in, and I didn't pull up both to compare, but I don't think the map,
the new map,
I don't think the new map is up there. And it's overlaid with the old supervisor group, including Don, so I suspect the new map is not.
We'll go through that. Okay,
let's talk about this very slowly, because I don't want Kelly to start having spasms down there when we talk about redistricting maps.
Yeah. And we finally got our final certificate of no objection on the polling location, too, for the redistricting. This came in today, so.
So Don is 3-3.
We'll take a look now. We'll get those things updated. We'll get a good current map up there.
And are we still doing business cards for board members?
Yeah. Yes.
I don't have.
Yeah, but it could be a little bit delayed if we. I'm not sure since Cindy usually did that.
We can get it. We'll get some.
We'll get them.
Yes.
Alrighty. I'll now open the floor for the first round of public comments. Anyone wishing to address the board, please step to the microphone. Keep your comments to 5 minutes on a topic and direct it to the board. Also, please state your name and address. Is there anyone wishing to speak at this time? Anyone online, Ms. Harris?
No, sir.
Okay, seeing none, I'll now close the first round of public comments. We have no public hearings, so we will now move forward with the action matters. First up is A, Child Abuse Prevention Month Proclamation. Rocky Reed, DSS.
Good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
So April is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and I just want to give you all an overview of the Child Protective Services Unit here at Fluvanna County Department of Social Services. On our Child Protective Services Unit is myself, Rocky Reed, Sarah Phillip, Rosa Figueroa, Janaya Booker, Samantha Ramirez, and William Ross. Fluvanna County Department of Social Services' mission is to be leaders in collaboration with other community agencies to serve county citizens, promoting self-reliance, well-being, and the best possible quality of life. The vision statement is a community where individuals and families have access to support and protection, which promotes health, independence, and opportunities. Next slide. So who initiates CPS referrals to Fluvanna County? Our largest number of referrals in the past year came from law enforcement, and we had 102 referrals from them. We work very closely with law enforcement with referrals that go become investigations or family assessments. Largest referrals come from hospital and medical professions, including therapists and counselors, followed by parents and family members, daycares, others, and of course we can have anonymous reports as well. Next slide. So over the last year, Child Protective Services conducted 91 investigations and family assessments. We average about 8 new cases each month. From those investigations and family assessments, in-home services and family support cases can be opened for services. We average about 17 cases per month for in-home and family support. And we also conduct outreaches to referrals that may need guidance on resources or services that's in the community that they can that we can make referral to without opening a case. Next slide. So this report is a victim disposition and risk annual report. When an investigation or a family assessment is completed, there's a risk assessment that has to be done to determine the risk level of reoccurring abuse or neglect. And if those risk levels come out high or very high, we are mandated to open an in-home case. If they're moderate or low, we can open a what's called a family support case for services that could be needed. Family support cases were previously known as foster care prevention, they changed the name. So it's now family support, and those are cases for preventative services that are short term and, like I said, have a low or moderate risk. In-home and family support cases was formerly known as CPS ongoing, are those cases, like I said, that are high or either have a court order involved. That also includes if a parent or guardian filed for relief of custody then we will have to open an in-home support services case before the courts would even look at relief of custody for a parent, and then that child could possibly go into foster care after that if we can't provide services to keep them in the home. Next slide. So preventative services are an integral part of the continuum of all children child welfare. They include but not limited to providing services intended to accomplish strengthening their families, promoting the child's well-being, safety, and permanency, minimizing harm to the child, maximizing the ability of families to protect and care for their children, prevent the occurrence or reoccurrence of maltreatment, and prevent out-of-home care, including preventing foster care. Next slide. So the VDSS and the state also mandate monthly reports that we have to do, and these reports are generated from our computer system, which is OASIS, that we put all of our contacts in, all of our interactions with the family service providers and whatnot. So I do have February Safe Measures report where Fluvanna was 100% in-home case contacts, the family support case contacts, service planning, and safety assessment, ongoing safety assessments. In February, there were 80 total in-person contacts. So even though we have 17 cases that month, we had 80 people that we had to see in that month. Next slide. Services and supports that are considered appropriate for resources for children and families can include information referral, crisis intervention, home visiting, mental health counseling, parent education and training, substance abuse disorder treatment, financial assistance, employment services, school-based services, mentoring, childcare, transportation, support groups, short-term respite, and other community-based services. These are services that we help the families to get if they need, if it's a recommendation from our assessments or from the courts. Most of these services are covered under their insurance. If it's not covered under insurance, then it's up to our workers to seek funding and possibly go to FAPT to get funding for the services that are recommended. Next slide. So there were 52,263 children in Virginia reported as possible victims of abuse and neglect in 2021. So we are trying to make sure that that number comes down every year. So please, if you suspect child abuse, please report it to either your local department or the Virginia Child Abuse Hotline at 800-552-7096. Thank you. Do you have any questions? I'm sorry.
I'm just curious, did abuse go up over the past couple of years?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
Did abuse go up over the past couple of years with parents home more?
Actually, the numbers actually stayed just about the same. Even though that the referral source might have changed because the teachers weren't seeing the kids as much, but you also had neighbors that were seeing the kids that were calling reports or doctors or things like that. So the numbers didn't move hardly any.
Gotcha, thank you.
So it didn't go up. That's a good thing.
Yes.
With COVID, a lot of stuff, people became short-tempered.
Yes. We did see an increase in a lot of the mental health referrals. I guess with everybody being closed in, and we're seeing a lot of the drug abuse rise again.
But now that kids are back in school, you haven't seen an increase in reporting?
Yes, we have. Which is good because the teachers are the ones that see the children the most outside of their parents.
Right. So early to tell still whether or not.
Yes, it's still
early. It was underreported. The fact that the numbers stayed the same doesn't necessarily mean it was underreported.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
All righty. Next up, B, confirmation of local emergency declaration, Mr. Dahl.
Mr. Chair, there's a motion to.
Oh, I'm sorry, Chief. Yes.
And before the motion, I got a procedural question. When things like this come in front of the board to make a declaration of, say, child abuse prevention month, and it just happens to be the one that's in front of us, whichever ones they might be. What's the value in the board making these proclamations?
You know, I think it really depends on if the board wants to bring more awareness, more public information on whatever the particular topic or proclamation is. Normally, on most proclamations, what we generally do, we generally put them under consent agenda, but if someone wants to come and present something, we certainly allow that. And when we send up the agenda, you know, the board can choose to not have that be an action item and put it under consent, and vice versa. If it's under consent, the board can bring it up for discussion. So it's just, I don't think that would be necessary.
I think the proclamation is very important to be read. Any proclamation, that's just me personally, any proclamation that we take the time, and they're always very well written, and put in a book that should be read aloud so that the public can hear, because the child abuse proclamation is very involved, and it explains what it is and what they're trying to do. And it's kind of, it's very helpful, it's very educational, and it's also saying that the work that we're doing, it gives social services an opportunity to come forward, and we can appreciate all that they do, and it's a very difficult job.
And I'm sure keep in mind, that wasn't a for or against question. And
no, I know it's not.
That's what I was looking for, I think, like, the response.
I think the biggest thing is to just bring attention to it. I mean, I wouldn't have known it if it didn't come across this.
Yeah.
I mean, in schools.
And interesting enough, through some, like, you know, local government channels too, that same question came up, because I think maybe...
We've talked about it before here.
Well, yeah,
somebody brought it up about 3 or 4 months ago, exact same thing you just asked.
Why do we do it?
Yeah, I don't think we get an overabundance of them, but some localities may get a lot of them. And so there was a question of, do we have a policy for the types of proclamations that we would allow and stuff like that? Because if everyone, you know, if they get 13, you know, 20 proclamations at one meeting, you know, do you go through them all? So,
and how do you decide which ones and who decides?
Yeah, I mean, so that's, I don't... Generally, when these have come forward, you know, we've brought them before the board. And again, I don't think that everything comes forward. Everything comes forward that's being requested, but I don't think...
Nobody presents unless they ask to present.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have to realize that we are the highest board in this community. We're here for every citizen, 27,000, and so we should be... interested and want to know. And this is about our children. And so
a proclamation is a statement to the community, and almost nobody hears it. If we don't have a board meeting with a subdivision, then it's pretty much us.
With any controversy at all.
Yeah. And so I'm just...
If anyone wants to go back and read the board package or archive it, right. I mean, it's always there. I mean,
I'm a procedure-minded person, so I've just been trying to figure out the value for the community and what this government is doing and these types of things.
Yeah, appreciate that comment.
All right, do we have a motion?
I move the Fluvanna County Board of Supervisors proclaim the month of April 2022 as Celebrating Children Month in Fluvanna County in observation of Child Abuse Prevention Month.
Got a motion made by Ms. Booker, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next up is B, confirmation of local emergency declaration. Mr. Dalton.
So I'm going to provide a presentation that covers B, C, and D, because they're kind of all interrelated.
Well, then let me just read all of them, so at least we'll get it out there on the thing.
Sure.
We'll have to do motions separately.
Correct.
C, emergency procurement, Hanley excavation and development contract, and D, emergency procurement, Xylem Dewatering Solutions Incorporated.
Yep. All right, so let me go ahead and open it up. So as the board is aware and the public has seen, you know, we were notified about a potential dam breach, on March 21st, 2022. So kind of how this came about, the Virginia Department of Conservation and Recreation, it's a dam safety and floodplain management division. They inspect dams periodically. There was a private engineering firm that was looking at a dam for a property owner, and it became alarming to them. The engineering firm brought it to the attention of DCR, And this lake, MacGyver Lake, was in the southern region of the county, kind of near Bremo Bluff, about 3/4 mile up from Bremo Road. So this lake at the time, and I've got a bunch of pictures too to show you, was estimated, the lake was over 10 acres in size, over 20 feet deep, and it was holding more than 60 million gallons of water, which if it fully breached would have put Bremo Road under 3.5 feet of water and potentially could have affected the Dominion Bremo site operations down there. So kind of the way this came about, DCR was alarmed enough that they contacted the Virginia Department of Emergency Management, VDEM, who in turn alerted Debbie Smith, Fluvanna County's Emergency Management Coordinator, around 2 p.m. on that Monday, that there was an imminent failure of this, and which set off a whole kind of whole chain of events and between, you know, county staff and public safety, trying to alert the public, those properties that were near it, just to make sure that although properties were not in kind of harm's way of being flooded necessarily, making sure that people or kids were not going down to the creek area in case the dam gave away. In addition, contacted with VDOT to close Bremo Road because of just some information. I'll show you some information why that was done. So this is just kind of an overhead view of where the dam breach was. So again, it's a little hard to see, but there's more pictures. So this is on this is about the width of the dam. Right here is the extent of it, and here's kind of the lake piece of it. You can see where it goes. And so there was maybe about a 3-foot section of wall kind of holding up the water there. So, you know, they were concerned if water goes up any higher, they were concerned with layers of the dam to kind of peel back and then ultimately having the water go through that section. And looking at the other side of the dam here too, you can see where the outlet pipe is. You can see there was a lot of residual, ground deteriorating over time. And again, this is just a look at the lake as a whole. So the little star right there is where, and you can kind of barely see, that's where the potential dam breach was. So this is the main part of the lake, and then it goes back up into this tributary here, which this whole area is not supposed to be full of water. Generally, it's supposed to be a much smaller lake. So going back to why we kind of moved the way we did, one, we got the information from VDEM and DCR. DCR subsequently provided a flood map of what would happen if that whole dam breached. So I didn't see the piece of where the dam was coming from, but again, it kind of winds through this Holman's Creek. Holman's Creek goes right here, but this is Bremo Road right here. And this is the Dominion Power Station, and this is the
West Pond.
The West Pond, yes, the West Pond. And just for the public's benefit, there is no contained coal ash in the West Pond. It's been remediated up to this point. And you can see they've got a big barrier around the West Pond that if from the flood map termination, it was not going to enter that necessarily. But again, there was an unknown of if 60 million gallons of water went releasing through there, what that would do. Again, from a conservative standpoint, they were showing that Bremo Road around that bridge would have been around 3.68 feet underwater. So that would do a lot of damage to a car coming by if a big wall of water came.
A foot of water will take a car away.
What's that?
A foot of water.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's 8 inches, actually.
Yeah.
So, just curious, that would have been a moment in time, though, right? Meaning that water's not going to sustain. It would have come through, rushed through, and in a pretty short amount of time, the 911 would be over as long as the road held up.
Yeah, I'll give you a good example.
Long the bridge stayed there.
Yeah, I'll give you a good example, and we'll see some later pictures. Once the dam was being pumped down manually, because there was concern of doing a force breach in an area away from the dam, worried that too much water would come down, and then if you let the water down too fast around where the area was breached, when water goes down, some of that dirt kind of falls back, and there was concern if you brought it down too quick that it would fall back and then would reach quicker.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, to kind of go back to what you're saying, though, there was a couple big force breaches in kind of what was the more solid still area, and I'll show you some pictures. And, you know, we were kind of going back down periodically down to Greenwell Ridge just to see what the effect was on the water. I mean, it took from even a minuscule amount of water, it took about 15 minutes for it to kind of, you know, slowly, you know, get its way down there. But if, you know, let's just say that whole section breached right where the dam inlet and outlet is, I mean, it's hard to say how long it would take. But no, I mean, it certainly wouldn't be, you know, a 24-hour thing.
You're right, it would not last very long.
Right. It's but, just the water that
but the effect would be this. Yeah. Anybody on that road is going to get washed away and be gone. Yeah. And if there's a train on the track, there's a possibility, because I think that's what the trains were.
Correct, and not sure what it would do to the bridge or the infrastructure or the roadway down there.
Thank you.
So to kind of go back to this, so, you know, again, we were notified. So before the county could do any repairs or mitigations, originally it's up to the property owner to do that. Once DCR was talking with the property owner, it was determined that the property owner was not going to fix the situation in the time that DCR wanted. So it went before the governor's office, who then could invoke an executive order to allow the county to start moving forward with remediating the potential failure on its own. And that's a crucial piece of information, because once the governor signed the authorization, that means that the county was going to be reimbursed from the state for all work that's being done in regards to this. You know, from
but it was also, we didn't have a choice, we had to get it done.
Correct.
And the property owners have no responsibility.
Well, no, but yes. I mean, there's going to be some liens or some remediation or reimbursement that the state's going to seek after the fact.
Okay.
So from the county standpoint, you know, we're trying to make sure we're doing this. One, that we have strict guidelines that we have to follow from DCR. We can't just go and we have to be very mindful of the cost of doing it. And two, we want to be mindful of the property owner, too, that we're doing it in as responsible and fiscally, you know, appropriate fashion, because they're going to be on the hook for something at some point. They're going to probably have some type of lien against their property from the state for what it's costing for this to happen. So again, so at around 7:15 p.m. that Monday evening, we got actually, I was walking down to the dam site with Roger Black, and we got the call that the governor had given that authorization at the time. So with that allowed us to start moving forward. Again, we were making calls ahead of time to set up vendors, but that allowed us to kind of lock in emergency procurement for contractors for excavating and pumping. So by 9:30 p.m. that Monday evening, Handley Excavation and Development, they arrived on the scene with an excavator. And again, there was no, from all the storms in January, there's no clear path to get down there. There was an old logging road, but it probably had 50 to 100 trees covering it. So to get in there quicker, there was a quicker way to go through the woods from a Dominion easement closer to the dam. So that's what the contractor did. And then after the fact, because the kind of the roadway going to the site was wider, then after the fact, they then opened up the roadway and removed all the trees because the larger equipment had to come through. Going through the Dominion easement where all the power lines are, some of the big equipment could go through there.
Who removed those trees?
The contractor.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, there weren't a lot of trees. They tried to, you know, kind of, you know,
yeah,
kind of get through there without doing a lot of tree removal to, you know, kind of keep it intact. So again, by midnight on that Monday, the pump, we had one pump that we had procured that was operational. In addition, Dominion Energy were helpful too, that they actually, within the next 24 to 36 hours, they ended up helping to get two of their large pumps up to the site too for pumping operations. And you know, they didn't charge anyone for that. There was some charge for getting it there from an outside contractor, but that was a big help to get three pumps on site to start pumping the water down, because there were some different rain events that were coming up as well. So just to kind of look at, you know, how some of the actions took here. So the lake lowering efforts, week one, again, were by pumps. You can see there's three pumps that had their pumps going into the lake, and then this is kind of around the spillway, and then the water was just pushing down. With these three pumps going, it could only move about maybe 14 inches of water in a 24-hour period, which from DCR standpoint, that's what they wanted. They wanted to see no more than 2 feet go down a day, because they didn't want the dam water to lower so quick that it could put some of the earth would fall away. But then after they got a better comfort level after the first week, this is the spillway kind of right here. They opened up the spillway with an excavator and then started letting water out with an excavator through that spillway, which really got the water down in the lake. As you see here, this was the morning after March 21st. This is the top of the dam. You can see there's only about 3 feet of kind of the top of the dam, and you know it angles down, and this is the lake going back, and these are similar pictures of that same site a week later. Here's the dam breach area, and then here's that same picture looking back towards the end of the lake after about a week of pumping and opening up the spillway.
Mr. Dahl,
yep.
Where did you put the water?
So where the dam is, there's a little creek, Holman's Creek, that goes down there. So the water went down the spillway into the Holman's Creek.
Just took it over the dam and put it on the backside and let it go to the river.
Okay.
Yeah. And again, they didn't want to let too much out because, again, concerned with erosion and flooding downstream and stuff as well. So that's why it had to be a kind of a, you know, somewhat of a slow process. On April 1st, DCR determined that the imminent threat was over. As you can see here, most of the water in the lake has been down to a good level. You can see the kind of breach in the dam, of that section of the dam. As of today, and even after looking at this picture, the lake has mostly been drained. And there's kind of an existing creek channel that's been diverted into that previous spillway. So what they're trying to dry out this dam area a little bit more so they can start excavating, because it's just really sloppy and muddy, and they've had some problems with excavators getting close to the edge and getting sinking down, so they're trying to dry everything out. So to kind of get through this, once it's dry and they can start moving forward with it, it's anticipated to take another 2 weeks to kind of do the final decommissioning. And what the decommissioning is from DCR, they want to basically open up a 20-foot section right here, and then it's got to be cut back by about a 3-to-1 ratio on both sides. So all that's going to be completely removed.
So what caused the breach?
You know, it's hard to say. So I didn't show some pictures, but energetic beavers that did a lot of work down there. Even when we opened up some of the breaches one day, the next morning there was a mini beaver dam set up the next morning.
I've got a dam in my house, and I've got to worry about it.
Yeah, so I think, I mean, again, this was built, you know.
When you let those trees grow on the backside.
Yeah, my trees are growing on the backside.
Yeah, you're not, you know, like I said, one, having the trees growing on the dam is a no-no.
No,
any debris that gets in or any, you know, thing that fills up the actual inlet pipe. So, because what happens is there's an inlet pipe in here. So once that gets filled up, the water just keeps on creeping up above that inlet pipe. In addition, where the spillway was, beavers were building a dam in the spillway. So the water just kept on getting higher and higher and higher. That's why it was getting so close to the edge of going over where the breach area was.
So is there any type of record of ponds? A listing?
Yeah, there is, and from this, that's kind of the next thing, is to make sure. I mean, again, the authority of this falls on DCR. So it was said that there's, I think, close to 1,800 private lakes, dams in the Commonwealth, and I think there was 18 in Fluvanna or more.
No, More than that.
I think more than that. Probably more than that.
More than that within 3 miles of my house.
Yeah. I don't call my water a lake. We call it a pond. It's about 4 acres.
Yeah, I don't know. This was called MacGyver Lake, so I don't know what.
I'm just wondering anything that has a dam, if there's record of it.
There should be. I mean, again, it technically it's supposed to be.
If it's under 300 feet long, Mr. Black explained it to me one time from the beginning to the exit pipe. Yeah. If it's under 300 feet, you don't have to register it if it's over 300
Even
feet.
Even with the county?
Don't ask me who. Mr. Black was telling me.
I don't think from the county. I
think it's the state.
The state has a lot of the oversight for this.
Okay.
Now, if it's affecting a large area, the county would be involved from a erosion and sediment standpoint.
I've never known this was here and it's huge, and I just wonder.
Trust me,
how many of these others are?
I got a phone call from Mr. Dahl about 3:30,
mm-hmm.
or no, about 3:00,
yep.
And I was on the school bus. I stopped the bus and said, "Can't talk right now. I'll call you as soon as I get my last kid off." So I finished, and as soon as we got off the phone, I started calling anybody I knew that grew up in Bremo, saying, "How do we get to this thing, and where is it?"
Because that was a problem. It's way back in there. There was no main roads to get to it. I mean, you know,
no easy path.
You know,
I could see some crimes being solved by this thing. You think so? Up in the bottom of that,
you think we're gonna find Jimmy?
I'm gonna have Mr. Black come out and look at my thing.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, Mr. Black has been, Mr. Black's kind of been the man on the ground. There was a couple nights Mr. Black stayed overnight. The first night when we were pumping, because he had to keep the pumping operations going, and plus we're using Dominion's pumps, making sure they're not running out of gas, burning out the big pumps, and plus if the water goes, we want to make sure that we alert people. So there was a couple times where he did some overnight shifts there. So, like I said, he's been a tremendous, tremendous help on all of this. So,
but we can have him come one day and talk to us one night, because he can tell you exactly if it's over 300 feet was the number.
Yeah.
Because I remember one time, Ron had divers to go in and check the overflow and whatever. The backside, and they went in, so that's the last that I know we've done anything to it.
Yeah.
So this is really making me.
Those pipes are metal.
Yeah.
Rough.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, there was some old galvanized pipes that were just completely corroded. Mm-hmm. I mean, they were just gone.
Is there a system where they check and, but it must not be, even if it's on their radar, where they're going in and making sure there's some preventive maintenance? Or
what they're supposed to be from a private, and I don't know the size, but private dam property owners that have dams are supposed to have an engineer come out and inspect it. It says between 1 and 6 years, and that's supposed to be submitted to DCR. I don't know when DCR.
I just wonder because it fell back on us.
Yeah.
So I'm just wondering what. I don't want to regulate people's property any more than.
The biggest reason it fell back on us is because they basically told us deal with it and then we'll take care of it.
Yeah.
And I think we have some pond specialists in the area through the extension agency, because I've asked them where they can come out and look at it and see.
It seems. Yeah. To me, that this could be part of, you know, a learned experience that could be added to the hazard mitigation plan.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Could have been a disaster.
Oh yeah.
And then how the response happens, and then B, you know, the identifying the ponds that are or dams that are of a size that might be threatening would be part of that process, and then you know finally, getting DCR to provide us a record of. If they're supposed to within 1 to 5 years of those actual records that they've done it, I think that puts them to task. Because this was lucky, right?
Oh yeah.
We got very lucky here that there was something else going on and somebody showed up.
Yeah, I mean, quite frankly, if they didn't have an engineer coming out to take a look or inspect this, because again,
the property owner asked for it, right?
Yeah, the property owner asked for it, but the property owner doesn't live on the property. Yeah. It's just, and doesn't live in the area. And so if that hadn't been done, I mean, again, the beavers were building damming up the spillway area. And so if they kept on doing that and the water would have...
That's what they do.
Yeah, if they would have pushed through, if the water would have pushed through where the breach was by the dam, that would have been a lot of water flowing through there at one time.
I just don't understand how all... And this is a later question in your presentation. I just don't understand how this all comes on us, other than the immediate protect the citizens. But I don't know how come, I'm having a hard time figuring out how come DCR isn't running with this themselves from here. Why are we dealing with this?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess because it's in the county and we deal with...
We're the closest ones
here. We deal
with
emergencies in our county. That's the only thing I can come up with. And again, you know, we the county declared a local emergency because of this. And you know, with that kind of put some protection in place and then kind of coincides with the state kind of invoking and that it's an emergency and imminent threat as well, too. So again, this is just the Code of Virginia that, you know, kind of declares, you know, what can be done for declaring a local emergency. And then, you know, obviously we also did emergency procurement because, you know, we called a bunch of contractors, you know, up until we knew when we were going to get the authorization. But at the end of the day, we had to get the quickest contractor out there that had availability. Mr. Pelican with Kurt Pelican, I think he was a Flugana graduate too, with Hanley Excavation. He, like I said, he was out there and he's been on the job.
No, I remember that name.
Yeah. Hanley does a lot with ponds.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, we actually called another contractor, a larger contractor, and they referred us to Hanley because they've done a lot of pond work and stuff like that, both building and kind of decommissioning.
Did you say Isaac?
No.
What was the first
name? It was a large company in Louisiana.
I'm talking about Pelican.
No, first name Kurt.
Kurt.
Yeah, he knows Isaac. So happy to answer any questions that the board has. Again, we've got three motions. One's for approving the local declaration, and then the two others are for the actual contract.
I'll agree with you that you've got a good question. Why was it dumped on us? Because trust me, that's the first thing I asked him, and he goes, "I don't know, but the governor just signed an executive order, and we've got to deal with it."
Yeah.
And okay, then let's figure out.
I understand it in the immediate, whatever
right.
It takes to get somebody there, but we're now after that. So one, what does it do for us to? Say that what are we saying that it's emergency declaration. What is that?
Yes.
Why are we making it officially an emergency declaration?
You have to do that because the emergency manager, Mr. Dahl, only has authority on behalf of the county to the extent that it's ratified by this board. That's what you're doing, is ratifying what he did.
And to be reimbursed.
By the state?
Yeah.
By the state. I believe, is that correct?
Well, I mean, the governor's authorization, it invokes it, but declaring the local emergency with the efforts that we had to go through, one, we had to close Bremo Road, you know, going to VDOT and getting VDOT just to close the road, I mean, there was lots of questions. We had to call CSX because, you know, that goes right down, and so there's a lot of things in play to notify the appropriate parties and make sure that we've got the proper mitigation measures in place. So
I'm just saying, and I understand the thing, but just the fact that it's post-event, making a proclamation that something was a 911, and I thought it was so he could get the funding. I was just trying to figure out.
No, it's so he can exercise his authority. He doesn't have authority without your ratification.
But he's already done it, though, right?
Yes, he has, it's happened sometimes that if the county administrator takes an action without the board's approval and the board doesn't approve it,
yeah,
then the county administrator is paying for it.
I see. So it's a post-event covering basis.
It's just like a snowstorm.
Yeah.
A lot of times we don't say anything until after the snowstorm happens.
In layman's terms.
We didn't have time to get to
it. Correct.
In layman's terms, it's a post-event, the board saying, we like what you did, we agree with it, right?
Well, I guess you could put it.
I mean, I guess you did what had to be done.
Yeah, and again, normally when those events occur, I usually notify the chair of the board too.
This happens in a number of different contexts where the board meets twice a month, and the county administrator's got to do something right now.
Yeah, I know a lot of people. The only I hate to use the word complaint, but the only fussing that I heard was, why are we getting in the middle of it? And my response was, we weren't given a choice.
No.
We were basically told we had to deal with this
and
now.
This is our county, and we're protecting our citizens.
The practical matter is that probably DCR wouldn't have been able to do it as quickly as we did. I looked at the Google map of this, and you have to see this from the air. Right. You can't find it.
Yeah, correct.
I mean, Dominion had one of their helicopters fly, and they had a drone fly over the whole thing. I mean, you know, Sheriff Hess, I mean, originally when this happened, no one kind of knew. Sheriff Hess physically drove out to the lake with some of his deputies to try and figure out a way to get to it. I mean, it was a little bit of a maze to get into the place originally. So,
we stepped up. We did what we're supposed to, but DCR is going to make us whole.
Yes.
Okay. Correct.
Yep.
That's a short way of saying it.
Yep.
I move the Board of Supervisors confirm the decision to declare a local emergency effective March 21st, 2022 in response to the emergency actions taken because of the potential failure of the MacGyver Lake Dam.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Now the motion proceed.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve emergency procurement contract between Fluvanna County Henley Excavation and Development LLC for the MacGyver Lake Dam remediation, as authorized by the Governor of Virginia, with all costs reimbursed by the Commonwealth of Virginia, subject to reasonable modifications approved by the County Administrator and the County Attorney to such agreement, and further authorize the County Administrator to approve and, if necessary, execute such agreement subject to the County Attorney's approval as to form.
Second.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. D.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the emergency procurements contract between Fluvanna County and Xylem Dewatering Solutions, Inc. for the MacGyver Lake Dam remediation as authorized by the Governor of Virginia, with all costs reimbursed by the Commonwealth of Virginia, subject to reasonable modifications approved by the County Administrator and the County Attorney to such agreement, and further authorize the County Administrator to approve and, if necessary, execute such agreement subject to the County Attorney's approval as to form.
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Eager. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Next up is E, Working in Commons Park proper consideration. Mr. Dahl.
So the board authorized staff to submit an application for rezoning the three parcels that we purchased in the Fork Union Commerce Park. Application was submitted to the planning department, I believe, February 28th. The technical review committee met on March 10th to discuss the rezoning. The planning commission will have the rezoning application before them on April 12th. And so as part of the rezoning, at times, you know, the board may want to either leave all the uses in play, or they may want to proffer out uses that they don't want to see. So that's come up with other applicants, or there may be things that don't make sense to do. So staff has provided some recommendations for the board's consideration, but the board can completely change what's there. And I'll just make one note that we made a little shift in something here. Getting rid of where it said indoor shooting ranges under the by right use and excluding outdoor shooting ranges under special use permit. If you remember, if whatever is under by right use, then whoever comes in can do that use. Now again, we've got a little bit more control because this is the county owned park, but at some point we're going to need to subdivide it and, you know, kind of start having parcels for sale. So we want to make sure that we're only letting uses come into that park that we want. In addition, for the special use piece too, again, we can proffer out certain uses, but again, ultimately, any special use permit, the board's gonna ultimately have to approve anyway. So that one's a little different. So for this one, initially from the by right use, we recommended deleting or excluding self-storage facilities and car washes. One, we got a lot of self-storage facilities. I'm not sure that's the best use of it. And then also car washes, because they use a lot of water, and currently we don't have a lot of water capacity down there as it is. And not, again, not sure that's the best use for a car wash. But again, that's just a consideration. And then from an industrial use, a solid waste collection facility. And then under special use permit uses, excluding out amusements, commercial and manufactured home sales, and then shooting ranges outdoors, and then solid waste material recovery facilities. Those are just some initial staff recommendations, but again, the board can completely change what they want. So this list here shows all of the uses permitted by right. So again, you know, we want a letter to go to the Planning Commission as they're considering the rezoning. So in addition to what staff put forward, are there any additional uses that the board would want to proffer out, or what we recommended, is that satisfactory?
Yes.
Well, we've listed the industrial uses that are permitted by right. You've left car washes in there?
No, car washes, but car wash would be excluded as a by right use.
Okay, so but this page is just listing what it is now?
Yeah, this page just lists all the uses that you can have.
Uh-huh.
And then we recommended pulling out the car wash one, the car wash and the
shooting range.
Storage.
The where is it here? The solid waste collection facility. And again, going back, we originally deleted shooting ranges indoors, but maybe we delete that. I don't think we want to.
No, it's indoor.
It's indoors, and so that's a board decision. So again, you know, sometimes it's good to have things excluded or proffered out that you don't want to see, but
I don't know why we wouldn't want an indoor shooting range.
Well, also,
no, it's that saying we could have one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
The gun store is across the street.
It's literally a half mile down the road, but yeah. that's up to the board.
I see nothing wrong with that. Anyone else?
I don't.
Okay. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, let me make one observation. You are doing this. You wouldn't do this in a normal case. You're doing it because the county is the owner. So you are preparing a proposal for the Planning Commission's consideration and your consideration for the rezoning. This is not necessarily what it's going to end up looking like. You can change your mind to add or subtract things.
When it comes back to you.
Just for the public's benefit, don't think this is necessarily locked in stone when you vote today.
All right. Do we have a motion?
And so just to make sure, I'm sorry, Mr. Sheridan, just to make sure, so our on this page here, is what's on here, is that the only thing that the board wants to exclude or proffer out?
That's the only thing I can see right now.
Mm-hmm. It's too early to tell. I mean, right now you keep it open. We've had, like, lumber yards and you know, complaints about those things as far as affecting neighbors, but not a lot of neighbors there and not a lot of businesses there.
Yeah, yet. And again, I mean, so this list right here, I mean, this is everything. So if someone comes in and it's by right, they can do it. Now, this list here, the special use permits, I don't necessarily think it's needed for the board to potentially offer out some of this stuff, unless there's something you just absolutely know you don't want down there. Because again, a special use permit has to come back to the board anyway. So if the board's fine with what's being proposed, we would put the letter going forward to the Planning Commission, proffering out self-storage facilities and car washes, and then solid waste collection facilities under by-right use, and then proffering out amusements, commercial manufactured home sales, and shooting ranges outdoors, and then solid waste material recovery facilities. Mm-hmm. So if that's what the board wants, I think what we could do with the motion is basically make the motion and say as presented in the staff's presentation. Fred, is that correct?
All righty, someone will make a motion.
I move the Board of Supervisors approve the following excluded land uses as proper in the rezoning application as presented.
Second. Motion made by Mr. Booker and seconded by Mr. O'Brien. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. I always thought the county did not have to go through the same processes that an individual would when it's on county property. An example would be when we built the concession stand over here on the girls' softball field, we didn't have to get the same approvals because the county owned the property and said it was okay to do it. Does the county have to go through always the same processes?
In order to amend zoning, it had to do.
Okay.
Now, the zoning doesn't apply to the county, but the county's putting this zoning in place in order to market.
So we can sell.
You know. Yeah, I got you. Thanks.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we can not charge ourselves for a building permit if we're building something, you know, something of that matter, but we're still going to, you know, go through and inspect and make sure that it's being built to a good standard. So.
Be a wash charge.
Yeah.
All right. Next is F, in presentations, comprehensive plan update, timeline, Mr. Miles.
Yes, good evening, Chairman Sheridan, members of the board. I'm here tonight to give you an update on the comprehensive plan process as we are here in 2022. So this is the current adopted 2015 comprehensive plan map. And you'll notice that the light green area that's in the center and the corners of the map, that's rural residential, and we're proposing in this current comp plan amendment process to eliminate the rural residential area to just have community planning areas that are in the purple fuchsia color, and then the remaining would be rural preservation.
Will you remind us what rural residential means? Because we were a little unclear, if you remember.
Yeah, at the open house. Library. Yeah, so in 2000, the county adopted the 2000 comprehensive plan. And Eric, can you go back, I'm sorry, to the map before. So the intent of the rural residential was to allow limited residential uses in those areas. And in the dark green areas, rural preservation, you wouldn't have hardly any except like family divisions and, you know, your own property divisions, that kind of thing. So
which means, I'm sorry, but in the dark green areas, you wouldn't even have by right? Is that right?
No, in the dark green area, you'd still have by right land divisions, minor subdivisions, you know, 2-acre lots, 10-acre parcels, all that.
Okay.
You'd still have, that's what I was trying to say, but there would be limited rural clustering going on in the residential areas. And basically, so like for instance, around Palmyra, in the village of Palmyra, you would have rural clustering occurring as opposed to a full large subdivision all around. You would just do clustering. And so in the last basically 20 years or so, that's not been occurring, where people would be doing rural clustering outside of a village area. Where are they doing it? They're doing it where water and sewer is around the lake. So, and that's been the pattern as to what we've done and tracked and everything in the development activity report for at least 10, 15 years now.
Well, there's some people have tried to do it, but then they wound up finding out there wasn't enough water at times and things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yes, we had a case a year and a half ago. You're correct.
Well, so I'm thinking more back 5 years ago.
Yeah,
and the golf course.
Right, and so, and then the project up at Camp Friendship, Walker's Ridge, and all,
yeah,
exactly. So when that was rezoned, and that was at the time when the Palmyra Village was really large and was almost kind of covering that area. So the goal, if you can go to the next one, Mr. Dahl. So the goal is to really make a clear distinction between, are you in a planning area or are you in the rural conservation area? And with the rural residential classification and a lot of rezonings or rural cluster subdivision requests, it's been confusing to folks that, like for instance, the Ballinger Bluff property was half in the rural residential and half in the rural preservation. in those kind of planning areas. So it was hard for us to determine, are you really rural clustering or are you building a residential subdivision? So and working in the last year or so with the Planning Commission, we brought that idea up during the pandemic, and talking to Chairman Bibb and a lot of the cases that have come through, that that was the trend, and we kind of tracked it and looked at it.
Can you give examples of that?
Examples of...
of where that confusion played a role and like what's actually changing by doing this? I mean, I don't know.
Well, by changing it to rural preservation, we're trying to encourage people to do the rural clustering in the rural preservation area, not in the Ravana Planning District CPA area.
I understand what the effect of this is going to be, though. Don't think that if you adopt this map and load the old one, that it's going to change the by right uses or by right activities, like subdivision. They're going to be governed by the zoning ordinance and the subdivision ordinance. What this is going to guide is the county's actions, including things like extension of utilities and development of roads and things like that. So if you took the situation exactly as it is with the existing zoning and existing subdivision regulations and changed the old map for this new map, and somebody came in and wanted a by right subdivision in the dark blue, you know, dark green area, it wouldn't change it because what a developer could do, what a landowner could do, is defined by what's permitted in the zoning ordinance and the subdivision ordinance. So if you wanted to make a substantial change, what you'd have to do is amend the ordinances to reflect this idea,
which is outside of the comp plan.
Right.
Correct.
So
what is, I guess I don't understand what's actually changing. If you're saying nothing's changing, what is changing?
Nothing is immediately changing. This is designed, so for example, if you had somebody come in and wanted to rezone a property that's in the light, what's now in the light green becomes in the dark green, it would be a consideration that you don't want that kind of that intense development in the green area. You want it to go in the pink area.
Correct. Yeah. So we're Mr. Bryan,
with the subdivision, a balanced bluff is a good example where a lot of people didn't like that subdivision, but the developer had a right to develop under the subdivision laws.
But it still has that right under this.
He would, yes.
Right, so what's the difference?
Well,
is it like a difference in vision statement, kind of? Or?
Well,
no.
I mean, our vision is that you wouldn't have it in the lighter green areas, but they still have the rights to? Or?
No, it's really the key aspect in the planning process of what we're trying to do is direct people into CPAs. Yep. We want to encourage people to be in areas with water and sewer, office, commercial, industrial, some additional residential. So. But that the key part of this comprehensive plan is what we're trying to do, and not just in the Zion, which I'll explain in a little bit, not just in Zion Crossroads, but also in Fork Union and other parts of the county.
The point is, what the effect of this is to guide the legislative bodies, the county, the board, and the Planning Commission. But the Planning Commission's recommendation, it's really the board's decision, what you want to do. You could use it to be, and I like to turn the microphone off when I say this because it's probably the most controversial thing you could do. But you could be very aggressive and say, we're going to amend everything to green to permit no subdivision less than 50 acres. You could do that. And that would be the way you would use this. So if somebody came in.
Under the previous map, you could not do that?
Yes.
No, you can do it, but the previous map wasn't as clear that you couldn't do that.
This just provides a little more clarity of where
are the areas you say?
Where are the areas you want to see growth? Where are the areas maybe you want to see less intense growth?
Again, to me, it's a visual vision statement.
Yes.
Here's what we'd like to put.
Well, and I agree, but I thought I heard a minute ago that, yeah, we want the subdivisions to go into green. And that's when I kind of was like,
rural cluster subdivisions. Right now, rural cluster subdivisions can go in the purple or the green. Well, it would be better for the rural cluster subdivisions to not go in the community planning area.
But there again, the issue is, if it's in the purple and it's zoned A1, they can have rural type divisions. They're bound by the rural restrictions, so the density is lower and things like that. But you wouldn't have a rural cluster subdivision anymore.
What you're saying is, if it was
zoned something different.
Instead of having 3/4 of the land remain open because there's water and sewer there, you fill up the whole thing.
Well, we have cluster subdivisions in all our districts.
I understand that.
You could, for example, have somebody come in somewhere in the purple and say, I want to have a cluster subdivision, but I want to rezone it R1 because I've got sewer and water. So I want to have an R1 cluster subdivision. If it's in the pink area, you know, hypothetically that would be appropriate. But it wouldn't be appropriate in green.
So the key thing is we're changing the comprehensive plan, and as Mr. Payne said, later after the adoption of the comprehensive plan, you have to look at the zoning and subdivision ordinances and make clarifications and statements in there of
Let me pause one thing. On this map, this is what's being proposed by staff. And again, this could totally change. And again, without getting too deep in, this is more of kind of the timeline update of what's going to be happening in the next, you know, 6 months with the comp plan. But, you know, that's really for the board's input, for the public's input, for these committees' input. Is this what staff has proposed, but is this what the public wants? Is this what the planning commission wants? Is this what the board wants? And so there's lots of time to change this. Maybe this is what they want. Maybe we want smaller CPAs. Maybe we want longer CPAs. Maybe we want to stay with this. But okay.
I still am confused as to how it's changed.
What we have right now, can you take this map and place every minor subdivision and subdivision on this map where they are? Some of them in the wrong spot, right?
Well, no, it depends on what you mean by the wrong spot.
I mean, in the rural preservation area, don't we have subdivisions that are in that it shouldn't be in there?
Well, they're clusters.
They're clusters.
They can.
Yeah.
Cluster subdivisions, rural clusters were intended.
I know, but I know before, when I got on board earlier, they could plot every subdivision, minor subdivision, on the map, and you knew exactly whether they were in the rural preservation.
I see what you're saying, Mrs. Booker. Yeah, we've done that.
I want to see it again.
Well, we've done it. We did it in the development activity report about a year or two ago.
That's too long. I don't call
it. Oh no, that's okay. But that brings up a very good point of what we want to do in May. As the next, as I kind of go through this, the next thing that we're going to be doing is talking about rural crossroads areas and rural preservation and the rural clustering that we've been talking about. But the next thing we're going to do is try to show on maps in different colors of where subdivisions are in areas that extend bus routes, there's other infrastructure things that when you don't cluster and put these subdivisions near other populated areas, it causes longer fire call delay response. So there's a lot of other things that are predicated on it. So, but we do have a lot of that information. Jason Overstreet did that, and we're going to update that in the demographic section.
I know we want to move on, but just give me one example of what I could do in the light green area that I can no longer do.
Nothing.
So it's just a matter of colors then.
Yeah, well, it's not just a matter of colors. It's to make the purple CPAs more attractive.
It's nothing.
How are they less attractive?
Right now.
I mean, because we didn't follow our CPA guidelines anyhow.
That's an ordinance. As Mr. Payne said, that's an ordinance thing. But we're trying to let everyone know we're doing the comp plan first and then following with the ordinance changes. Remember the teeth of the zoning ordinance.
I have to insert, we did follow our CPA guidelines, but that's a little
yes and no, it depends on how you read it.
Okay, guys, we got to get to closed session.
Yeah.
And then come back out.
So anyway, like I said, obviously we could talk about comp plan and the lots of changes here for a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, so the key thing is that, you know, we do have the a lot of the Thomas Jefferson Planning District Commission plans that are done, the rural long-range transportation plan from 2018. It's been completed, and there's numerous things, including the Colonial Circle roundabout, that have been implemented already. But to keep in mind that we have those available, and as we create the comp plan, we'll put parts of those in for the Planning Commission and Board to consider. The same thing with the regional housing plan that just got adopted in August of 2021. That was about a two-year process to create it, but even about a five-year process that the county was involved with since 2017. So, and then it got adopted in 2021. But the key part... I'm sorry?
Whose plan was that, the back of the housing?
That's the Regional Housing Partnerships Plan that we're at chapter four of that, yes.
Of TJPDC.
Of the TJPDC, and so
They did a regional piece, and then they focused specifically on each locality.
And I've read it. I'm just trying to be sure that's what we're...
Yeah. And the key about that is that you want to get people, when we go to Richmond for lobbying efforts, we lobby as a region and not individually as county or something. That was one of the main tenets of it.
Yeah.
So, but there's other things in there that we can consider and not.
And that can be modified.
And that can be modified as well. So the key thing, like we're talking about here, is the main thing that you all as a board control and do is future land use. So the most public input that we're trying to gain in the open houses and other outreach approaches is to get how does the local land use, how do we want to have that created? And one of the things we're trying to talk about next is rural crossroads areas to, as part of rural preservation, but also have rural business and other things where people can go have services and not drive to major.
And when you think of a rural crossroads, you think of like a very mini CPA, like maybe mm-hmm. like by the Cunningham Market or like by where the
Charlie Kids store.
Yeah, you could have like a little miniature kind of, you know, plain rural.
Kids store, Kent store, Cunningham, Troy Market, and so on. So
now, like, we're pretty full. We got funeral home, a rescue squad, fire, post office.
Yep. So these are some of the March 10th open house discussions. I'm sorry, this is the groups that have been set up meet monthly. We'll start next Thursday. The rural preservation is Mr. Overton McGee, Kathy Swenson Miller, Susie Morris, Marvin Moss, and Mr. Gibson Warsham are the folks that are appointed on that. We'll be doing that April, May, and June at each open house. TJPDC staff, the county, and Louisa, we're all currently on the Zion Crossroads stakeholders group, but we also, the Planning Commission, wanted to add some residents, Josh Bauer, Steve Hurquist, the retired Illinois manager, Andy Sorrell, our previous senior planner, lives here in the county, and Steve Smith. So one quick thing to let you all know, we were in a meeting today for the VDOT open house that Louisa is basically gonna have, that we're a part of, is Tuesday, April 19th, up in the Spring Creek Clubhouse, and it's two sessions, 3:30 to 5 and 5:30 to 7. We just met as planning staff and VDOT on that today. So that's in about a little less than 2 weeks. And the last group is the Historic Preservation Advisory Group. Once we finish our open house events and kind of go into the summer and the early fall, these are the residents that were selected: Donna DeGuano, Judith Mickelson, Marvin Moss, and Mr. Moss is on both Rural Preservation and Historic Preservation, Deborah Murdoch and Hayden Parrish. And they would look at some additional historically significant projects that basically the Historical Society and other groups have brought up in the last 5 years. Now here's where we had some of the comments that occurred at the open house on March 10th. You can see that there's a real need or interest to revitalize areas, the Palmyra Main Street area, and they want it to be more of a true tourist destination, where eventually new shops and stores would come in there once we move out of the complex that's there now. Then we also, and really in the last 6 months or so, have have seen an increase or focus on the Four Canyon Village commercial area with some basic shops, restaurants, and services on Route 15. And we've been doing some work with VDOT there as well for streetscaping and sidewalk restriping and things like that. Crosswalk restriping. But as you saw earlier with the proffer information, we wanted to start focusing on the Four Canyon Commerce Park for economic development and growth. So we see the planned water and other sewer improvements in that area real important. And then we'll continue to promote, of course, the Zion Crossroads area. There's a lot of transportation work going on right now, and then the water and sewer infrastructure will be done soon. So the attendees did agree with kind of removing that rural residential, make it one preservation area to be a stronger approach. They were interested in looking at some of the older stores to be reused, like what's happened to Walton Barbecue and now DeMary's at Cunningham Market. And then just basically the main theme, of course, was no major developments occurring in the rural preservation area. So those are some of the comments.
But to note, no major developments could occur without water and sewer to begin with.
Correct. So we're hoping development follows the new water and sewer lines. Correct. Yes, sir. And then you all have this, and I know it's real small on the screen. We have handouts in the back, and you all have it in your packet. But that's the basic, I think Mrs. Booker, you asked a month or so ago about getting a timeline. So that's kind of our overall timeline to have benchmarks and dates that we can do it. And then, of course, our planning staff are interested in working with you all on the Board of Supervisors retreat for comp plan in a couple Saturdays from now. But that's the schedule there for individuals to know that the open house sessions and the group work will be done simultaneously. It just helps us with staffing. And then as we go into the summer and the early fall and everything is the last slide.
So when it comes to some of these open houses, again, in the library, you know, we've got the big partition. So the residents will kind of be working on stuff, but then the public can still come into the other side, ask questions, give feedback, and all that stuff throughout those open houses.
Yeah, the GIS, Jason and John Michael and planning and GIS will be up front assisting people like we did last time. And then the back portion by the kitchenette area, we'll be back in there working, and then have some of those same people who want to come out from 6:30 to 7 and provide comments. So, but we do have the flyers and the handouts. We've been trying to get additional people to come to the events. And like I said, there's also the website area that they can come and provide us information as well.
And again, this is kind of the framework. You know, if the board or if the planning commission, you know, if we see maybe we need to do another date at some point, maybe on a different day, or if the board wants another update throughout the process at some point in the summer because they have an interest in something, you know, we'll certainly kind of fit some of that stuff in as we go.
So do you have some extra one of these?
Yes, ma'am.
The post office.
Mm-hmm.
So.
This one.
Yes, the flyer will get out. The other one's kind of more, anyone can use it, but the main flyer, the first one, yes, ma'am.
Just curious, in the discussions around rural preservation and rural residential, was any, you know, thought given to the fact that your water and sewer lines are likely to expand outside of CPA zones, and, you know, how is that going to change over the course of years?
They are, and we're actually, in some areas, proposing to expand a little bit of the CPAs because of that in this process. And we're going to propose that.
Right.
But an expansion of a water line is something that has to that you can regulate a commerce plan.
That you can.
Can.
Right, but if you're saying, if on the one hand you're saying you're expanding the water line, but you've limited the where you can put in growth by, you know, essentially eliminating rural residential and saying this is rural preservation now, that falls outside of that line now, even though the line's expanded. So unless you grow your CPA zone in order to meet where that is, you've essentially limited the uses to that landowner.
Right? That's right. And that's I think that's what the staff, one of the things the staff had in mind when they did the Zion's area, is that sort of follows the water.
So just real quick, we did, prior to the pandemic starting and everything, we had Dewberry doing the water and wastewater master plan. So we actually did future 20, 30 years where everything in the CPAs could, you know, where that could be done. So that's coming to you all soon, and that's where we're trying to say that we want everything to match up and mesh together. So
you expanded, because it's not on the map, you've expanded the Zion's Crossroads area, you've expanded
Zion's Crossroads
the Monticello area, and you've expanded the Fort Union area.
We haven't expanded the area of the Ravana Planning District, what parcels that could be in larger shopping center size. Areas that are currently not, we want to show those as insets and show where that certain areas can be expanded.
Around the Ravana, a lot of it's already kind of,
it's pretty big, I get that.
It's from Ravana's at Lake Monticello.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And then Columbia, was Columbia expanded too?
We did not. We actually looked at...
Yeah, we don't, I mean, right now we don't have a whole lot of water and sewer infrastructure plan for down there. I mean, you know, there's a little, you know, Aqua's got a small system down there, and that's something we certainly want to look at for the future. But, you know, I think probably more in the immediate future, we see Zion's Crossroads, the Fourth Union area, and maybe the Palmyra area. In the Ravana area, you know, around Lake Monticello, that's already occurring. That they already have water and sewer, that's already occurring. But I see those three other areas as probably being the areas that need more focus and more immediate attention.
Yep. So that's all I have for you, but at any time, please just call or email me. I'd be glad to update you all on how the progress is going and see you on a couple Saturdays to go over more stuff on the retreat. Thank you, Chairman Sheridan.
You're welcome.
Just a couple things I want to say on this. One, I've talked to a couple committee members over the past days on multiple committees, and they're feeling still they don't even know yet what they're going to do. And I understand time. I like the flow chart aspect of this. I just feel like there's still a lot of gray area, and thank y'all for putting this schedule and chart together. I feel like there's a lot of gray area, understanding it's a marathon, not a sprint, of what's happening when and how it comes about. And I'm just trying to figure out, as they are, these pieces. Maybe when they'll start having more meetings, they'll understand what their role is. But we have nothing to hand over to the committee members to say, here's what your committee does and here's what you'll be doing. Do we, or?
Yeah, no, we'll be doing that. They'll be receiving their material.
Please step to the microphone.
Yeah.
So it doesn't exist yet, though, right?
No, it exists. We actually are going to, we've been working with some of the folks on those committees to do some of that information. But no, we have the materials. What we're trying to do is provide to them. Remember, as I kind of said in the meeting, we're not changing a lot in the comp plan except certain things with land use and infusing in the infrastructure and transportation changes. As a county, the comprehensive plan is in very good shape, and we're just trying to enhance it.
But I will say, there's a lot of people with real concerns about what the comprehensive plan spells out and designs now and allows. And so there's a notable amount of people that want to see some change and effect on that.
Well, I mean, the comp plan's out there, and so I guess those individuals are on those individual plans. I mean, certainly during the committee sessions, they can bring those concerns forward, and it's not, I mean, yes, the comp plan's done, and it's not proposed to have a major rewrite, a complete rewrite, but if the committee sees a lot of changes that they want and it's brought forward to the board and the planning commission, doesn't mean some things can't be changed.
So if, let's say there was a little bit to be done and then another time there's a lot to be done, if the committees are going to be there either way, then there would be a prescribed, here's what your tasks are, right? Whether there's a whole lot to be done or a little bit to be done, if we're always going to have these committees, every time we visit the comprehensive plan, then the role of the committees won't change whether it's big or small. Right?
The role of the committee is, I think you're talking about the advisory committee.
Yeah. Yeah.
It is advisory.
Right.
It's for them, the members of that, to make suggestions as to changes that ought to be made or ought not to be made.
Yeah.
They don't have any statutory standing.
I understand.
The Planning Commission does, but the advisory groups are purely, you're sort of taking a poll of people in the room and right. saying, what do y'all think about this?
And plus the Planning Commission selected some of them based upon some of their resumes and their background and kind of appointed them or nominated them to certain committees that maybe fit their professional expertise.
The idea that Planning Commission expressed was, and Mrs. Eager can correct me if I'm mistaken, was we have a bunch of volunteers here who have asked to be on these advisory groups, and what we want to do is allocate them the way we think they would be most useful to us in designing these issues. Design a solution to these issues.
Yeah, but the role of the advisory committees, be it now or 5 years from now, is going to be the same.
No,
right?
Not necessarily, because we've never had an advisory group like this.
Oh, we haven't. I didn't.
And it has no statutory standing.
Yeah.
This purely, in some sense, it's debatable whether we should have these districts, these groups, because they certainly give certain people more median access to the Planning Commission and board than it does others. Some might argue that, and I'm not espousing this one way or the other, but some might argue you give a special consideration to this guy. I don't agree with him. You shouldn't do that. We ought to both stand up at the meetings and get it. So don't think this is an inherent part of the system. It's
which
not.
I mean, we appoint people to committees.
So, Mr. Fairchild, let me kind of summarize it this way. The way that comprehensive plans are made today, in today's world now, it's not a lot of text and information and research that's shown in the comprehensive plan. It's actually very graphically designed and laid out so that you can see certain areas of an intersection, and that's what you want, the office, commercial, residential. So, and I think some of the people who have questions or concerns is that we're taking away some of the language that they like, okay, that helps. But what we're trying to do is put that information more graphically, and as Mrs. Booker brought up, we're gonna show folks that these things are happening and we wanna correct them and make things better. So we're trying to do it more graphically. And I think the folks really like the text that's all in there. So that's kind of where we're at. And we've looked and we've done this through all the ones.
Do we feel like we have put into print what the role of each of these committees,
advisory
groups, of what their role is?
Well, we're going to be doing that Thursday night with them, starting off that the packet material we're actually going to hand it out Tuesday night at the Planning Commission, so that the Planning Commission knows before they start, as we told Mr. Bibb and the others, that's what's going to be on their plate for Thursday night, so that they can go forward. And then they'll continue to get that information. And then actually some of the folks who sit on the committees and, excuse me, advisory groups have talked about working in between the time in the library themselves, so which is up to them, I mean, as citizens, yeah. So residents. So
I don't want to belabor this, but I'm telling you, there are people who are trying to figure out what their role is. We created these advisory groups. It sounds like we're saying at the point when we appointed people, even we didn't have in print as a county guidance and direction for what they're doing, each particular group. And if we did, why didn't we give that to them at the point that we appointed them?
Well, they were all present, either virtually or actually, at the Planning Commission when they were appointed. And the Planning Commission discussed what their role would be.
Yeah, and so, and not to go back into the Village Gardens as an example, when we were going through that rezoning case, and we were explaining to them what was going on with the comprehensive plan, they said, we're not involved. And actually, now that we're getting them involved, we were hoping we can turn the corner in a positive, proactive way to stop the things that they don't want. Because the staff is really going to tell them Thursday night, we want to know what you want to do, what you don't want to see, we know.
So if the Planning Commission could know, when they're appointed, why couldn't it have been in print then? If they had to, if they could have heard it then, why didn't we give them clarity in a document that says, thank you, you've been appointed, here's what we expected. And all of our jobs and everything, you know, we have all these manuals and so on that tell us what we're doing, and here's, you know, at the beginning of every one of these board meetings, there's a, here's how a meeting is conducted. Why weren't we prepared? So we did that.
We issued a letter to them after they were appointed. After March 8th, we issued a letter to all of them to indicate what was going to be proposed, what their requirements would be, and when they would be needed.
So it was different per group?
Per group. It was a summary letter to everyone. So actually everyone in one of the three groups knew where they would be playing in the schedule that is shown here. So, again,
we have spelled out per, what is it, three groups, right? We have spelled out per group what their particular role is envisioned as we get them started.
Yeah, and the second group has already been running, so that's the main one, Zion Crossroads, and they're just being folded into that group.
In the process, though, the process is you're reviewing sections of the comprehensive plan and you're seeking input from both the Planning Commission and these advisory groups.
Correct.
And that's essentially the process is,
yep,
here's a section, read the section, provide us your input and thoughts on it. There is no, you know, I mean, do your research if you want to, look at these things, but there is no real formal task that anybody is doing as part of the process.
Where is that spelled out though?
That's just been the process.
That's just how we work. And then, remember, a lot of the chapters that are currently not being reviewed, they've already been reviewed by other consultants. So the Dewberry Water and Waste, we didn't do utilities and infrastructure.
I'm talking about what these volunteers, they said, I'll step up, and they're sitting here in this, some of them are expressing to me that they're in this kind of float zone. They're not sure yet. I'm just going to leave it this. We should have given people something that says, until next steps, here's the general sense of what your committee is going to be about. We should have been able to give that to them in a way that they could read it and go, I see, now let's wait for step number two. And that they don't, there's no vision statement. There's no, this is a big term.
Yeah.
There's no, here's the general sense of what your committee is going to do that we hand it over to them to say what's.
That's not consistent with what these two entities are. They're not entities, these groups. They are not making decisions.
Right.
They are not designing the plan. They are giving their input however they want to make it. And a lot of it, a little of it, big change, little change, whatever they want to say.
Mm-hmm.
They can say whatever they want to say on these issues.
I'll say it this way. For someone like me who's only been here like not even three years, I need their institutional knowledge.
Yeah.
That's what we're striving for. They know that. Other people who have been appointed, like Mrs. DeGuan, she's only lived here a year. So she has stuff that she's bringing in from other areas to tell us that this may work or not work. So it runs the gamut. There's people that have lived here their entire lives and want to extract everything. And there's things that even folks in my office, I've asked them, oh, I don't know, why don't you ask Mr. Moss that, because he, you know, or whatever. So that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to empower them to utilize their skills and their things to set up that. And we're not creating new vision statements for the rural preservation area. So we're not, everything that's in the comp plan is what's going to be done. And then we're just enhancing some of it. So we're not.
I'm just going to leave this. There's people on these committees that don't have clarity of what's expected of them.
Okay.
And that's not a good thing in any organization. And that's true of the citizens and our constituents. And when they ask me, I go, gosh, I really don't know either. And that's just not. Whatever the role is, an official, whatever. That's not a good organizational structure that creates confidence
so after
in leadership.
April 14th, if you still hear that, then we have an issue. I don't think you're going to hear that after April 14th and going into the March 12th session. I think they'll know they're on track and they now need to participate in how they'll participate. So. Yes, sir.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Now I'll go forward with the consent agenda. G, minutes of March 23rd, 2022.
H, road name adoption, Hannah House Lane, Mr. Overstreet. I, FY22, radiological emergency preparedness program, Rep Grant, Ms. Smith. J, memorandum of understanding between the County of Fluvanna and Fluvanna County Radio Control Flying Club, LLC, Ms. Harris. Is there anything you want to pull? Hearing none, do I have a motion for the consent agenda?
I have a question. My understanding in our history, I remember, what was her name? That was assistant county administrator.
Right.
I remember when we named roads in the county, I remember her standing in front of the board saying that we had a policy that we would not name roads based upon people's names. I just want to bring, I don't care what we call it.
I don't remember that.
But if that's a policy that's out there, then I just thought I should mention it before we go saying, yeah, let's name it after somebody.
Well, you're not naming it, you're talking about this one, you're not naming it after a person, you're naming it after a house.
A house?
Yes. It's Hannum House Lane.
The house is built in the 1700s.
I see.
And I think originally it was called White Cottage, but then a woman who lived there for nearly her entire life, well until her hundreds, her name was Hannah. So when we bought the house in that parcel, we just started calling it Hannum House.
I see.
It would probably sound better if it was White Cottage.
Okay. I mean, I don't care either way. I just okay. Thank you.
Any questions? All right. Do we have a motion?
So moved.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mr. Booker. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. Now we'll move on to unfinished business, and then. Is there any unfinished business? I don't believe there is any. Or is that the Zions Crossroads water line? Yeah. I thought that was under new.
No, that's all right. Follow-up.
Okay, Zions Crossroads water line extension, Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, really quick. So I met with Brad Humphrey, who I think Mr. O'Brien and Mr. Sheridan both kind of forwarded me an email. It's about some infrastructure funding available for bipartisan infrastructure law and then drinking water state revolving fund. So there's a program out there, and this is in reference to the Zions Crossroads West extension. I was going to go ahead and apply for some funding for this. The thing that I want the board to know, though, is it's not 100% just all grant funding. What they have for this is there's either one, a really low cost loan, which you can get, I think they said the rate's around 1.5% right now, but what they do end up doing based upon different criteria for different environmental justice factors, they may forgive a portion of the principal. Now, in addition to that, I'm still gonna go back to DEQ and see if they can request some additional funding too, but just wanted to see if the board had any. And again, we're not obligated by anything at this point. If we submit an application and we get something, just because we get it, there's no upfront cost. It's just staff time to do it. I just want to make sure the board didn't have any issues and what with submitting for that, and we can see what they come back with. And they could probably give us a better idea based upon the package of, you know, let's just say we're looking for $1 million in addition to what we've already kind of already earmarked and received for funding. You know, maybe they'll forgive principal of 50% of it or something. And so at that point, we can determine, well, do we want to move forward with it? Or maybe also kind of in conjunction with that, where, you know, we can see what type of DEQ funding comes, is available as well. So is the board any issues with staff moving forward with that?
No.
Okay.
All right, and now it's L, Social Services.
So the board, so I received a letter from the Social Services Board. I got the letter, I guess, a day or two ago, and I provided the letter to the board, basically stating that I unilaterally changed their request. And if you look down where they say what items have changed, I can tell you some things were changed, but it was not
by myself when I'm sitting. I met with this. These changes were made back in December when I met with the director of social services and her office manager when we were going through the budget review process. And so I think what the social services board is saying is, if there was a request in there, even though there were lines that were, what was being budgeted in that line was incorrect. Because if you look down at some of the things, there's some lines I decreased in the request, some lines I increased, because what was being budgeted was factually incorrect in the line that it was going to. It should have been coming out of this line. So there was some movement in those lines. So, you know, I think from their standpoint, they're contending that because they're, because they have some authority, that I shouldn't have done that, even though I was meeting with the social services director at the time when we were going through this, and I haven't touched the budget since then, besides what I proposed to the board. So anyway, I just wanted to bring to the board's attention. You can see the letter there, and it was signed by the chair, vice chair, and other social services board members. You know, throughout the process, what was presented, I didn't hear any, there was nothing brought contending that to the board that what was being presented or what was being proposed by me was not agreeable to them. So I just want to bring that to the board's attention.
So it's off by $1,000?
Yeah, well, I guess what the request was.
No.
And again, whatever the request is, I don't necessarily approve the request, because again, there's their full request, and then there's what their baseline request plus their full request, and basically with some changes, I basically funded their full request. So, like I said,
I mean, that's normal procedure that you would sit down with the director of social services and review where you thought the changes could be made, and she'd provide discussion. And
Which
social services board could come back and provide their input, right?
Which we did. We met, and there was none of this where Eric's off to the side changing the budget document without their input. So,
well, it seems like during budget discussion, social services can, Ms. Mabe can share her concerns or her thoughts on it.
Yeah, and at the time, in Ms. Mabe's defense, she shared them far after the fact, after my budget had already been proposed and had already been forward, and everything was advertised and out in the public budget book. So,
and we're talking about $1,600.
Yes,
I mean,
yeah,
my math is close to being right.
Yeah, the money's not the issue; it's just the perception in terms of how it's handled. I think is what Mr. Dahl is
right
trying to address. And
process. That's all I have.
All right, thank you.
I've got two quick items. One is, I think we should, I would like to see us start having, and I don't know what to call it, but for lack of a better term, a to-do list, that when we leave a meeting and we say, Mr. Dahl, would you please add this to that list, and whether it was going to be done by next meeting or 2 months from now, I've noticed that there's times where we leave the meeting and we say something's going to happen, or let's work on this or look into it, and sometimes it goes into, we don't know what the next, we don't know what the next step is.
Rather, right, you're saying just to write down stuff and we come up with ideas we'd like for them to look into, or things of that nature.
Usually from the board meeting, if the board has some things, we will put it in directives in the minutes or the
action report.
But where does it go after that? So once we read it in the minutes and we're a month later, and yeah, we're in the action report and so on, but where is that list that gets ticked off of that it's still live in action until it gets taken care of?
I guess that's in my internal list of things that we're working on. I mean, for instance, a prime example, at one of the last meetings, the board asked for, they wanted to know, wasn't there a memorandum of understanding with the ARC for funding? So you have the ARC memorandum of understanding. I mean, if there's something that we're missing, maybe maybe we're not doing enough, a good enough job of gathering what the board's directives are at the end of the meeting.
So this isn't about individuals at all. It's about process to me.
Well, I think that's what you're saying. You'd rather have us have the list written down that we can look at.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but there's something called a month and a half ago or something. Again, everybody's human.
Yep.
It's not a comment about staff at all. But there was something that we said to you, we asked you about, and you said, yeah, that's, I think that's been handled. And then ultimately you said, actually you're right, we didn't. Do y'all remember what it was?
Yeah.
There was something that you said, yeah, you're right, I did not bring it back.
There was something I think I recall vaguely.
It was the water report.
What's that?
The water report?
The Virginia thing.
That's right.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, that didn't come back in front of the board. And again, no problem with
it. Did come
back. It did come back. It just not
until we said we have not seen.
Yeah,
it.
I brought it back up. And said,
yes. Right.
What I'm saying. You brought it back up.
Right. But in a sense, that's the, you know, if you're making, and I'm not disagreeing that there could be a passive, but you'd also don't want to create the redundant processes. But I mean, I think to a degree there is a responsibility of the supervisor who is asking for something, and where there's then sort of tacit approval from the rest of the supervisors saying, yes, please devote staff time to pursue this. Mm-hmm. It is somewhat, you know, on the responsibility of the person who brought that forward to champion and say, hey, I'm looking for that follow-up on that as well.
And so when leadership says to staff, please give that to us, it's not up to leadership. No, that's what I'm saying. They eliminate the human factor. It's not up to leadership to go, hey, I haven't heard back from you. When you say that to staff, we'd like to have that, and you didn't get it. Yeah. It's not up to me to remember and go, hey, remember that we said we were going to. Well, it should go on that. I'm just imagining a list, a task list.
Well, and I guess maybe sometimes we have a list of things to do that we know need to be done, but I guess if we don't get a date that we need them by, because it's asked by a certain date, doesn't mean we've forgotten about it. It just may, a lot of things came up, and there's more higher pressing priorities.
And that's why I said, whether it's the next meeting or 2 months from now.
Yeah.
Because I thought ahead about that. I don't care if it's 6 months
from now.
But I feel like we should have a list that we don't forget things because we're anxious to move on to the next thing.
So you're trying to say that we're all getting old?
No.
And
you are.
I am.
I've had this problem since I was younger.
Well, and remember I said I was going to bring some up? I'm going to talk about something like this with another item.
So, does the board agree or disagree that we need something like this, or what's your thoughts?
I never sense the problem, so,
okay.
You know, once in a while, it's not to a point that I think we need to jump on the list. I mean, it just happened a lot of time, but I think they've been pretty much on.
Okay.
Well, they've been on task.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
Again, it's not
a list.
It could be the best people in the world. I'm not talking about people.
I'm talking about process. Yeah, I mean, I guess from a staff standpoint, if there's directives that come out, it would be helpful for the board to then give guidance of if they want it within some certain period of time. Because again, you know, we are human, and things could drop. I'm not saying that we're perfect, but sometimes. Again, as I said before, it doesn't mean that we forgot about it. There are just other things that are, if we don't know that there's a date that it's done by, it doesn't mean we're not going to do it. It just means that there's other things that are taking priority.
I think the hesitancy might be, in my opinion, is that, you know, Mr. Dahl is, you know, tasked to be the county administrator and to direct. We're tasked to give general guidance and to pass, and, you know, our ordinances and those things.
Right.
But we're not here to oversee his day in, day out task per se. You know, that's his responsibility, and to the degree that he fails to do that, this is a degree that we, you know, continue to employ, right?
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the process.
All right, well, our thing is supposed to start in about 30 seconds,
yeah.
And we still gotta go to dinner in closed session.
Yep.
Ms. Booker?
You want to wait? I can wait.
Do you mind waiting on that?
Mm-hmm.
I appreciate it, man. Thank you. But I think you bring up a good point. Like you just said, I forget stuff. I call him up sometimes at the oddest hours of the night and say, hey, before I forget, let me tell you this.
Yeah.
And then the next day, I forgot.
I don't mind a simple list, and I just don't want to be in a position where micromanaging the county.
All I'm saying is if we said as a board we'd like to see something, I don't care. I'd just like it to be on the list so we don't forget that we want to see it. And if it's 6 months out.
Whether it's to remind us or to remind y'all.
Right.
Yeah, we can read it.
We'll talk internally.
Yeah. Hey, we'll come back to it and revisit it, but that's just something. Anyway,
yep.
Mr. O'Brien.
Mr. Chair, I move that Susanna County Board of Supervisors enter into a closed meeting pursuant to provisions of Section 2-2-3711A7, Section 2-2-3711A8 of the Code of Virginia 1950 as amended for the purpose of discussing litigation, actual litigation, connection of Susanna's projects, water and sewer project, and legal matters, county-owned property in Columbia.
Do I have a motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. Motion passed 5-0. We are now in closed session.
I move the closed meeting be adjourned until the County Board of Supervisors convene again in open session. Be it resolved, the Board of Supervisors sets the advisory project to test each member's knowledge. One only public business matter is lawfully exempted from open meeting requirements of Section 2-2-3711A of the Code of Virginia 1950. As amended, two only such public business matters as were identified in the motion are with the closed meetings to me or heard, discussed, or considered in the meeting.
Second.
Second.
Motion is made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. Ms. Eager?
Aye.
Ms. Booker?
Aye.
Mr. O'Brien?
Aye.
Mr. Fairchild?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. We are now out of closed session. Mr. O'Brien, do you have a motion for us?
I move the Board of Supervisors approve and ratify, one, the engagement of Hoover Penrod PLC as attorneys in the representation of the county and the Susanna County Treasurer with respect to the county's claim as creditors in the bankruptcy case 22-6011-5-RBC in regards to A.T. Dillard, Inc. debtor pending the United States Bankruptcy Court, Western District of Virginia, Lynchburg Division, and two, the filing on behalf of the county of any responses, motions, answers, or other filings in such cases deemed reasonable and appropriate by counsel from Hoover Penrod PLC, the county attorney, and the county administrator, and the execution or signature by the county administrator or counsel for the county to such filings on the county's behalf as appropriate.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Mrs. Booker. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We didn't hear the recorded vote, did we?
No. Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
Oh, we did. Okay.
Yeah.
Quickly.
We'll vote.
Yeah.
Did you vote?
Yeah.
Okay. All against? Chair votes aye. Motion passes 5-0. All right, folks, we will now.
I'm going to have a closed session.
We did.
Roll call?
Yes. All right. Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, I'm rolling. I didn't even call Mr. Fairchild, Mr. Weaver tonight.
I know, sir.
Hey, I was thinking about this whole time. Don't say Mr. Weaver. All right. The budget discussion, Mr. Dahl.
Yeah, so Mr. Sheridan, members of the board, let's see here. Let me hide this. All right, so if the board remembers last time, we advertised a real estate tax rate of 87 cents and a personal property residential tax rate of 375. Personal property business and public utilities stay the same at 190, and machinery and tools stay the same at $1.90. So since the budget last time, I've only had one change that's come up, and if you remember, we talked about fire and rescue workers comp went up. We also got notice that the county's workers comp is going to be going up a little bit too, which amounts to $12,000. Now that means we're short $12,000, but there's an easy fix for that. As we were balancing the budget last time, as we were kind of going into an advertised budget, the board originally put $50,000 in the BOS contingency just as kind of a placeholder for things they may want to consider. And then we put another $120,000 in BOS contingency as we were trying to come up to just an advertised balanced tax rate. So to level that 12 grand out, we can easily just go ahead and hit minus right here for the 12,000, and we're all balanced if that's what the board wants to do. I mean, again, that additional 170,000 BOS contingency is a pretty hefty amount. I mean, that would be my recommendation from the board to get us at a level balanced budget at this point as it stands.
Is there any other option?
you would either have to, we would have to decrease expenses elsewhere, or you're going to have to increase revenues, or you're going to have to increase the tax rate, which we actually can't do. So that's, to me, that's probably the best. That's probably the most. So at this point, you know, as far as determining, so next week we're going to have a public hearing based upon what the board advertised. And so there's really no big discussion. I mean, the board could always have some work session afterwards if they want, but I mean, unless the board has any big changes, I think some of the only things that we haven't addressed at this point, I know there was some discussion from the board for CIP.
We threw in some numbers at the end too.
Yeah, the fire rescue brought up something, I think it was about a $50,000 request.
They did.
And then there's $1,000 from social services. Seems pretty true, or $1,600. Seems like it's pretty.
Well, we threw in a bunch of numbers at the end. We put 400,000 block in there for the entire, and we don't even know what those numbers are now, do we? We haven't seen anything on
it. We don't. We had, it's still being finalized. So, I mean, for that, what I would say with the 400,000, I mean, when it's all said and done, unless we get a final report prior to budget adoption, I would just put that into the BOS contingency, because we know it's going to be some amount, but it could be less, it could be more, and so if it's in BOS contingency, once that comes about, we'll bring it to the board for their final approval.
Well, I had mentioned about doing 200,000 for the half year.
Okay.
Do it start January 1 and do 200,000, and then if there's an increase or decrease, we know we're going to see an influx in January 1, or we should, because I think the assessments are going up. I don't want to assume anything, but since our neighbors went up 12%, I think it's a pretty good bet ours to go up.
Yeah,
we've been.
And like I said, that's entirely up to the board. I can say for certain there are, at some point I'm going to need to address with the board that there's positions that are under where they need to be.
Well, that's what I'm talking about. Yeah, I just, one of the things we've done in the past is put it and pick it up at January 1. And then we can do it July 1. And we had another number we had, 50,000 somewhere.
Yeah, well, that's, again, going back here, this number right here, if you look up here, we put 50,000 as just kind of a, I think Mr. O'Brien made the suggestion, let's just put 50,000 in there because there's some things that we may want to cover.
Right.
And then when we came back to this next, to the last meeting where we got the big surplus of personal property, when you're trying to balance it, we were unbalanced by 120,000. And so we just put the 120,000 in BOS contingency. So, oops.
How much is normally in there?
100,000,
right?
Yeah, I mean, in your BOS contingency right now, you already have board contingency. You have 150,000 in your contingency every year, and you put those amounts in there just as kind of a placeholder for right now.
Oh, so that's on top of that.
Yeah, you got the minus the 12, you know, around 158 plus the 150. So that's.
Oh, so I mean.
But you had substantial.
There's almost 10 cents that we can take off personal property. If I remember correctly, it's 189.
Well,
for a nickel. A nickel's 189. That's a nickel we can take down.
If you wiped out the entire board contingency, right?
No. Yeah.
That's not wiping out the board contingency.
Well, we only have 300,000 in board contingency right now.
You want to keep 150 in board. That's
up keeping 150.
Right.
If you wiped out 10 cents or a nickel?
A nickel. I said 10 cents. It's 189 a nickel.
Okay.
We'd be close.
And so a couple of things, just a few things that came up. One, the UTV that came up, that was 20,000. That the board didn't do anything with that. And again, if the board was going to do something with that, I would add that into the CIP, and then maybe you could take it out of the 170, or you just fund it out of fund balance, and it doesn't affect the tax rate.
was thinking about funding that out of fund balance, it's just $20,000.
You could do that. It's a one-time cost, so that's, I mean, that's certainly.
I mean, it's below CIP levels, and
It is in the grand scheme of things, but I would just.
And it's bad precedent to take it out of fund balance. You know, I mean, why don't we put in a contingency in order to have that in place, right? I mean, I'm not.
Yeah.
I mean, I think we can still reduce the personal property rate, but I'm just saying, in terms of precedents, these are the kinds of things, especially for $20,000. That should just flat out come out of the contingency that we put in specifically.
Yeah, we talked about taking out a BOS contingency.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. It should come out of that, not out of fund balance and/or not out of CIP.
So does the board agree to add the UTV in there?
I think that's what they were. Yeah, I think we all talked about that as being necessary.
Okay, so I'm just going to add 20 right there. So now we're 20. So now we're 20 short. So let's go minus 32. Okay, so now we're even.
Yeah, it doesn't remember any change.
What's that?
So the 170
change. 170 and change.
Remember, we're taking away, this column right now reflects only changes from the last budget.
Yeah, so 132.
That was the request that the chief brought up.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. 20K.
And then there's a $1,600 for social services. Is Ms. May, did you mean?
She's there.
Do you want to address that $1,600 differential, or?
Good evening. So the $1,600. When I met with Mr. Dahl and Ms. Melton in December, Mr. Dahl recommended a couple of changes to our budget request, and we were okay with that. We didn't contest it. What happened was when we received our actual budget from the county, we received it on February the 2nd. And so we noticed that the column with our request was changed to match the county administrator's recommendation. And I was under the impression that what Mr. Dahl was recommending would go under the column, the county administrator column, and then our actual request still remains as the request. So, and I think the letter from the board was just the board just wants the Board of Supervisors to know what we actually requested. That was the only issue. And this year it's only $1,600, but next year it could be $10,000 or, you know, $20,000. And I think the issue was that the request was changed, not that they're really wanting that $1,600 back, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I don't think they're asking for the $1,600. I think what they're saying is, and when I go back to, we made a request, the request shouldn't change, although what was being requested was in the wrong line and the amounts were incorrect. And so you can look at it one of two ways. I mean, we pay the electrical cost, and so if you're budgeting above what the electrical costs are that we're doing, well, that seems, I mean, I guess from the Social Services Board, they can ask for more for electrical costs than what we actually pay for, but that seems not to be.
Wouldn't seem
reasonable in my opinion, but that's, they can certainly do that then. I mean, so from my standpoint, it's trying to be fiscally responsible and looking at where things should be coming out of the correct line. But if they think I can't do that, well, that's whatever.
And I don't think that's the issue. I think so. when we met with Mr. Dahl in December, he was able to pull up and show us what our actual expenditures were over the last few years and made a recommendation as to how much we should put in our budget line for electricity. I understood that. That was fine. I told our board. But again, the issue is, where does that amount go? Does it go in the county administrator's recommended budget line, or does it change our request? And I don't have the authority to change our request. That comes from the board. That's all.
Gotcha. That's a matter.
It's just a procedural issue.
They just wanted to make sure that they were heard about a procedure.
Yep. I agree.
And the board just wants to make sure that you know what the actual request was.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. Is there anything else we want to look at?
As far as the regular budget?
As far as the regular budget goes.
So right now we essentially have theoretically somewhere between $570,000, but if you were to allocate a half year, you could make it $370,000 in terms of whether or not we were funding the raise increases.
Well, and we got another $138,000 right there.
I read it as 170, but you're right, it's 138.
Oh, 138. So 538.
It's actually less because you got the 20,000.
But yeah, we basically take the 32 away from the 170. That's the difference.
And the only thing I was saying is we could look at, that would be, if we did half a year, 338,000.
Right.
Which would be,
but then you don't have
almost two nickels.
Right, but you don't have the contingency then.
Well, we still have the contingency.
Yeah, you have $150,000, but you don't have the. We wouldn't have the flexibility with regard to the what the compensation study comes back to implement it beforehand or afterhand, after January 1st, right?
Correct.
So we wouldn't have that flexibility.
Yeah, we would. We just might have to take it from a different place.
Well,
I mean, we got, I don't know how many million sitting in the general fund. I mean, obviously, to tell you not to do that, but every once in a while, if we have to take $100,000 or something to balance or level things out, if it comes back, if we started January 1, it comes back and says, okay, we need $75,000 more. Then we could just pull $75,000 into the general fund and survive until the next budget season.
Let me ask you.
Yes, ma'am.
Where is the salary study? It's not here yet.
It's.
But you all are saying it's $400,000.
In the
sense. We haven't seen it, and we wait. Like you were saying, we're going to be hiring.
You're right. We have.
We want to have.
Yeah, we have 9 open positions, and one of those positions have been open for 13 months.
Right.
Actually, we have 10 because someone that retired, we haven't even posted it yet. The compensation study, to tell you where we're at with that, they have all of the job descriptions. They have done everything and compared it with several of the localities, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics, et cetera. We are at the point now where she's actually making our pay structure. From there, we have to meet with the board to decide where you guys want to base the new pay structure off of, whether it's the midpoint or the 95th percentile, et cetera. But we're almost there and hoping within at the max, maybe 2 weeks, she'll have that completely done. She's had that for about a week now, right?
Yeah, I don't think we're gonna have the full completed one. Unfortunately, it's just taking a little longer.
It has.
By
the
time we approve the budget,
just say COVID.
We were off. They were off. It was about 3 weeks that we lost. So.
And then we had the dam break into the
And like I said, the board, you know, like whatever the board does, I just know there are positions that we are having trouble getting, and I can tell you one of them specifically because I've been doing it. So, and some of our pay is just not.
Yes,
it's
not
competitive.
We're not going to draw any people.
We're not. And I honestly, I was at another HR convention with IPMA. We need to really move forward with this, or I'm afraid we're going to lose more people.
Yes.
So I guess, you know, what Mr. Sharon is sort of advocating for is trying to reduce the personal property tax by maybe a nickel, maybe 10 cents in his mind, but maybe a nickel. And so the question is, does the board have sort of appetite for that?
Yeah. I mean, just see where y'all are.
That's fine.
To reduce it by 10 cents? The only way we can do that is we have to find $396,000 something.
If you did that, then you are for sure potentially, you have limited the proposed amount of money for the compensation study to $200,000. Actually, to probably $150,000, to be honest. And so therefore, you're either going to then pull that out of general fund balance, or just, you know, come out of this pocket, pull out of that pocket, if you went for 10 cents. If you went for a nickel, then you could take the remaining $132,000 and take $50,000 out of that $400,000. And then if it came back that we had to put in another $50,000,
we didn't put in $50,000, we just put a 50 in. What are your thoughts, Ms. Eager?
Linda's asked one thing. Does the board want to just start off with, okay, we've got this 170 here that was just kind of there for a placeholder. Do you just want to say minus the 170 so you can kind of see what that starting point is? I mean, because that was kind of
a problem. Just say 238, 220, 270.
No, he's just saying if he moves it all over, then you know what you have.
Yeah, because we already decreased 32. So if we just say we're decreasing the whole amount, because we've already offset that 32.
Well, okay. So I was just going to offset it from that number, 138,275.
I see what you're saying. Okay. So that's kind of your adjustment, the 138 right now. So, I mean, you could say we want to move the, what are you saying, you want to move the personal property?
Yeah, if you moved it to 370 would be the lowest we could go, and we'd still be short.
Yep.
34,000.
Yeah, you're short 34,000.
Right.
That's you know, that's easy.
Was there anywhere else? And that's when I said, hindsight 2020. We were all so excited to be able to say 87. We probably should have said 88.
Yeah.
Just to balance it out and take part from one, part from others to one whole section absorbing the whole hit.
Well, we could also we could also say, let's do 86.9 cents. For the budget for the real estate, right, instead of 87. So now we're in the 86 cent range, which is always like that.
No, what I'm saying is we put all the increases in personal property, except for 0.1%. I think it was 86.9 was the equalized rate, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, hindsight's 2020. We probably should have said 88. As an advertised rate, so we can put part of the increase there and part of the increase in personal property.
Do we have an equalized rate?
No, he was just.
Oh, equalized in terms of.
In real estate. The real estate, the equalized in real estate.
Personal
property. No, not personal. Real estate equalized rate was 86.9, we're at 87.
It's not an official reassessment year, so we don't do what
right.
we don't
yeah, have it's a guesstimate. What did
he was Mr.
Oh,
Sheridan was just
was projecting to the future. Yeah, I see what you're saying. Okay, he's projecting to
the other Mr. Sheridan.
Yes, the
commissioner. Right. So, I mean, I've never been one to think that 86.9 versus 87 is something that you can brag about.
I'm not saying that. I'm right. saying if we'd have left a little wiggle room
right.
on the other side, if we have an increase, we could have spread it out both ways.
Right. So we tried to find 34,000.
No, we found 34,000.
I mean, if
take
the
it out of the general fund.
Yeah.
No, just take it out of the 400,000.
Yeah.
Then if we have to
pull it. Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. That's what I'm talking about, the general fund, if we have to. Chris, Mr. Grechow?
I agree with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well, so, I mean, that's
so knock it to 350. Just knock it to 350 to keep it a round number. Knock the salary thing to 350.
Said put it to 350.
And then we're 15,489 above.
Okay.
So just leave it. That'd be going into the general fund to pay the part of the. If we have to go up with the salary study, then that's 15,000.
So where would you go to 350?
So
for the salary.
Oh, so okay. Here's okay. So we put 400. So we reduced it by 50.
Okay.
For a July 1 start. I mean, so now we've got excess of 15,400.
Reduce it by 40 and you've got, you know, $4,000.
I mean, 15 is not an issue, and we probably are going to have to go up because the study will need more.
Probably.
I mean, we can put the exact number in if you want. I mean,
yeah, it's one half dozen or another, right?
It's up to the board.
15,000 or 10,000 is dropping the well right there. 50 cents.
All right, we're going to use that $15,000 somewhere else or not?
No, I wouldn't. I just...
Then just even it out right there, I guess.
Yeah.
And do we know the insurance increase is going to be $95,000 or do we figure that out?
It's going to be a ballpark.
Yeah, that's, I mean, again, you don't 100% know that until... That's the ballpark projected on what everyone is kind of at now and making some assumptions, but... You know, some people could.
Can we leave it just like this with them being 15,000 over?
No, we have to put that 15,000 somewhere.
Okay.
Oh. What happens if we go to 86.99?
No.
Come on, let's do it. Come on, like let's do it.
I
86 cents. We haven't seen 86 cents in a long time.
I think that Mr. Sheridan, that's not here, would not be happy to.
I was gonna say it would be 86.
No. I'm saying for that $15,000.
Hey, hold on. Put in eight. Just to play with his.
Yeah,
so 86.95. 86.96 would be close.
Right.
Okay.
All right.
Hold on. Let's
see. Eight. Look. Oh, you got to do it to all of them, man. It's going to get closer each time it goes.
Okay. Coming on.
I think we're okay.
Coming on back. No,
I'm going
to come down.
There you go. Heck, you could have made it 86.95, I think.
Yeah, you can go to 86.95. We're making people.
We're over it. Yeah.
Yeah. And never mind. Go back to 87.
Yeah.
No, do 86.96.
No.
Use it up.
No.
Absolutely.
No.
Absolutely.
I need consensus.
I want to see 86 cents, man.
Okay. 87 is a lot easier to deal with than 86.96 or 86.9. Yeah, 86.96.
I tried. I just want to say I tried to lower. All right, I did try. Okay, you know. Actually, I did lower it.
Oh my God. I'm gonna leave that so totally alone.
Just put my fellow board members.
Yeah, just trying to say.
All right. Is there anything else we need to look at, or we?
Well, he just needs to even that number out. He's got a zero, so.
I'll just put that in the contingency fund.
Yeah.
Whatever
he's
that
gonna,
is.
He's going to just correct it there.
Yeah.
That's
easy enough.
So this 400 is 365, and
that's we'll have. I mean, what we have? How much have we spent out of our board contingency this year?
Well, here I can tell you, it's in the board package here. Let me see here.
We still have enough left to cover quite a few things. But that would be our end of the year.
You've got 99,000 left still in this fiscal year.
Right.
And, I mean, we talked about salaries and stuff, but we just talked about our inability to... We've saved enough in salaries that will go back into the kitty to cover the entire 400,000.
Sure.
Probably.
You know,
Mr. Dahl, would that be close?
Probably less. Yeah, I mean, I think one salary alone for one year.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about. It's probably less.
I know that Louisa sent in a bill, but Pika, I believe Pika Louisa's person, anyway, that the board can raise their salary every year. I don't know if it passed or not.
Can raise whose salary?
We don't even get the bonuses.
When we give out a bonus to every employee in the academy, 5 employees that don't get the bonus.
Yeah, but they took that to the general assembly. I don't know if it passed or not.
So Louisa did?
Louisa did. That's what I talked to one of the supervisors.
And yeah,
I
just as soon as that passes, they're going to raise their tax rate to 75.
The fact that we were able to do what we've done, and I know personal property is not where we want it to be, but.
So our budget's balanced right now. Now, going back to is there anything else the board wants to look at in the budget? Because again, there was some discussion on CIP items too, and so.
Yeah, you know, at the last minute, I was thinking about women, joint lowered their request by $12,500, and when we were doing the budget, this is what Age would do to you, and I didn't write it down. I was wanting to come back because you had a concern about elderly people can't get a ride.
Oh, that's
and
what
I'm
you're
saying,
talking about
why this. Can't we make a deal with joint and use that? I mean, $12,000 wouldn't do it. But that they would have a midday run where people could go to the doctor's appointment and they could pick them and bring them home before 3 or 4 o'clock. But I slept on that one. We really do.
I don't know enough about the way they do it, except for the fact that they pick up at certain mm-hmm. points.
Right.
But to do the door-to-door would require so much manpower.
But, yeah, but sometimes it would depend on how many patients you have. You don't want a busload. Everybody knows 5 or 6 people may not go to the doctor the same day.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This would be more of an individually based thing.
Right. But it's needed. I spent 4 hours a day taking the elderly to the doctor. 4 hours. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind. I'm not complaining.
Can I double dip and have the kids drive by and pick them up and take them to the doctor's appointment?
That's a good idea. Right?
That might be good for their blood pressure.
Yeah.
Right around those children are running.
Yeah, yeah.
Right up that proposal.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, well, we've got to do something.
I don't know of anything else. That,
well, the CIP. Go ahead.
I don't know. I mean except the CIP, but we're only talking about a small amount for CIP.
Yeah, again, just as the board's going to approve a budget,
Did we reduce the school buses or not?
You did not. The board talked about it.
Oh, yeah. We didn't reduce the school buses.
Yes, but we were going to give them money for
the
wireless.
It was the wireless. Mm-hmm.
So it was a switch between the wireless and the school buses.
Yes.
Correct.
Right.
And the three buses.
Yeah, I think we should do
we
that.
We don't need to buy 16 buses in 1 year or 13 buses in 1 year when we can buy 5 a year and cover everything.
And they definitely needed the wireless system. Sure. I mean, that's what Dr. Gratz said.
And that's the one at the high school that needs to be upgraded. We want to keep their accomplishments where they are. And having said that, I'm not sure if we need to recognize, don't get the wrong name, don't ask me which, one of our teams just won their 4th consecutive state championship.
Yeah,
an academic team, I think, or debate.
Forensics.
I knew I was going to screw it up.
Williamsburg High School has won that forensic every year. And Kim called me because she's in Williamsburg. She said, Mama flew Van Venus. We won.
We won for the last 4 years, I think.
I think Williamsburg had,
We've had an exceptional run.
Yeah.
And people sit there and want to say things about how we're not getting stuff accomplished. Just look at what our academic teams are accomplishing.
Swap out
the buses for the technology.
Yeah, that's what we talked about doing.
Well, or swap out 150,000 or whatever it was for. What was the technology?
The
wireless wasn't 300,000, I don't think.
What they requested. That was their original request, was 300,000.
Well, then we'd get us our 30,000.
Well, yeah, you can pretty much wire. That's a lot.
You remember the last time when you talked about Chromebooks and you said that's a lot for a Chromebook?
No. That was about whether it was going to the regular budget.
3 or 4 years. Okay.
No. I know, but that was that discussion. But no, I mean, a wireless access point is in the $100 range for a good one. You know, $330,000 divided by 100. If you do $100 per installation, $200, you're talking about. What, 60, that 6,000 access points in the high school? I mean,
I do this for a living, so I know.
I stay as far away from a computer as I can stay.
6,000 access points would be
It's not realistic.
Yeah, it's not realistic from that standpoint, but maybe 150,000 or something.
Can we use some of the ARCA money for technology?
They would have to do that.
Yeah, because they have their own ARCA money, don't they?
Okay.
I believe.
They do have their own federal ARPA type money. Yeah, that's what they requested, and
do you see a number?
I mean, that's what the 300,000 was in there as the original amount.
As a placeholder.
Yep.
Is there anybody from the schools that wants to talk about that?
Anybody on from the schools?
I don't think so.
Nope. That is a really big number for what they're talking about doing.
We can always give them 150,000.
All right.
I think we ought to go back and talk to the school and let the school educate Mr. Tony O'Brien.
I'll tell you what, if they want to put it in for $300,000, I'll be happy to do it for
$100,000. I want to see that conversation between you and what's he may learn some of you both.
We can put $300,000 there, but that's one we can still adjust.
Well, again, I mean, I'm still a big fan of doing the spray park. I think that's something that we should really bring in.
I thought we
did put it in.
We don't have water.
No, the spray ground park's not in.
We don't think we can do it anyway.
We do $150,000 and minus one bus, minus two buses, then we can do the spray ground park.
Well, no, I think what Mrs. Booker's talking about is having the necessary water availability. And
that's correct.
So how do we get the water then?
We have to get the water.
So maybe we put in the money to get the water, then next time we put the spray park in.
We do need water.
Okay. So.
No, wait, just come up here and get to the microphone, Mr. Spitzer.
All right.
No, I'm not the station.
And Mr. Hickman may want to come down this way, too.
Yeah, so the park has no potable water or any water source other than the well that runs to the schools right now. We have a couple wells that does the butterfly and the community garden, but they are not able to be used for potable water use. They're not safe enough. And the only one that's safe enough right now is the one that feeds the school. There was research done for a new possible well, like behind the pole barn area, I know at one time, I believe. Mm-hmm. But that would take some money to pump it up the hill because it'd be down the hill. So that was, and then we had the well that I found behind the school. But that is close to school property because it's right behind the retaining wall. You know how they have the retaining wall at the parking lot? Yep, it's right behind there. And it does drip water. But I don't see why the county would take that water and run it all the way back across to where I need it at the soccer fields when they have the well right there. You know what I'm saying? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, what?
But there are water issues. Like, I have citizens ask me that, why don't you have potable water that we could come and stop on a bike ride and get a drink of water? Mm-hmm. We don't have that. Like, you know, the bike route 76 or whatever it is?
Yep.
A lot of them ask, they come and stop at the park, and what do I have to do? I have bottled water in my refrigerator that I give them.
So we have no potable water.
Potable water is runs to the school. So I have one tank, hydrant that I can use for potable water. And that's right at the top, almost in my Carmel field, because that runs to the high school. So that's the only one that's legally potable water.
You know, the
water.
Interesting thing is we're just doing this, and Ms. Harris and Mr. Hickman was looking into this, because we've got an MOU with the schools. And if I remember correctly, there's some language in there. It was not meant for the county's well to be a permanent use for the school. Now, let me take it back and say, well, we're not going to go ahead and cut off the water. Sorry, school, you don't have water.
Next week off.
Yeah. I mean, and so we're having to look at our kind of shared arrangement with the schools and for kind of what that whole water system looks like and who's responsible for what and from a long-term standpoint, too, you know. That's a well that, that
sounds like to me this is a conversation for another day.
Yeah, we have issues with our irrigation system when the well, when their schools are pulling from the well, because that feeds our irrigation system for soccer fields and everything.
Right, but here's the thing, okay, if we don't address water this year,
it's got to be addressed somehow. And it's getting worse. It's going to get worse.
It's going to push that out, right?
It doesn't affect the irrigation system for the baseball field.
Yeah, because there ain't no.
What water do you use for the house?
It is off of a well next to the house that could contain E. coli, and we have signs that say it's not potable for drinking or for cooking use. You can only wash your hands with it.
Okay.
But what happened in the bathrooms outside, we have a holding tank. So we'd actually, it, the well fills into the holding tank for the bathroom, and that's how we run our bathroom.
Mm-hmm.
We tried to pull off of the school well one, the line that runs to the school one time, and when their chiller comes on in summer, it sucks all of our water out of the pipe.
Where is that well located?
It's over by...
It's at the disc golf course.
Yeah, by the disc golf
where my disc golf course okay. is, by the ball fields.
Yeah,
right down
between
the bottom.
Baseball, outfield.
Yep, at the bottom of the... Right
at the bottom
trails.
Of the hill, I thought, so...
Yep, it's at the bottom of the hill. If you look at the picture with the parking lot, you can almost see it.
I would love for us to figure out a way to use that well that has that, if it's bubbling out of the top,
mm-hmm.
then well, it's a tremendous water source. And eventually, if it's that close to that retention wall, it's going to cause issues to that retention wall. Isn't it?
You would think.
There's one other thing, too. I mean, so technically, if I remember correctly, the sheriff's office is not potable water either, or the library.
I don't believe the library is either.
No. And so there was some money put in the CIP many, many years ago to try and I think Mr. Hickman's, Calvin, can you come up? There was money put in the CIP back when, I think, different public works director.
Before us?
Mr. Stevens, yeah. There's money in there for making the water system at the sheriff's office and library potable water, isn't there?
The water at the library is potable.
The library, the sheriff's office?
The sheriff's is not. We are meeting with BDH tomorrow, in fact. They have said they will allow that water to be potable. What happens is when the well is drilled, BDH has to be involved. It has to be permitted correctly. That well was not when it came into place when that well was drilled. And so BDH wasn't involved enough to see how it was grouted and cased over. It took a lot for us to find a lot of documentation. It's taken me a year to find the correct documentation. To get the BDH, they just now said they would make it potable. We have a meeting tomorrow with Valencia Taylor, the engineer from the Lexington office, and she said she's going to give it over to us. So that water at the sheriff's office will be potable.
So we had $50,000 in there to I remember there was a CIP in there for $50,000 to make that system potable, and I think connected to either the library or whatever needs to be done. So are you saying that $50,000 we are not going to need for that project necessarily, or maybe to a lesser degree?
To a very small degree, very small.
Next question is, do we have enough water with those two wells, which I'm guessing are two separate wells,
yes,
that when we do our project right across the circle, will they be able to feed that, or do we need to go ahead and try to do a study now to find water for the new building?
I would say a new well.
A new well. That was my question. So that money right there we could use to pay for some type of study.
Well, and the other thing the reason I was asking is there a way to convert those funds to, I don't know, I know they tried to drill a well back behind that Pleasant Grove at one time and it was not successful.
They cleared out some area, but they never drilled. Okay. They went out to survey it, to drill it, and find the location, but they never drilled.
Okay.
So I could show you that area.
Where is that area?
Behind the pole barn, you go down the trail behind the pole barn.
Yeah, to the left.
You keep going right. Down to the Reds Trail, a little bit about halfway down the hill before you get to the bottom. You get right on the trail, and it's right off of there.
Well, what I'm getting at is maybe there's an opportunity to use that $50,000 to do something with the water at Pleasant Grove.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's what we're getting.
I would look and see which one's closer. That well that's already dug, or the well that's...
That's bubbling?
The well that's bubbling, or the one we would be digging down there on that trail.
Oh, it's not even close to the ball fields.
I'm not talking about the ball fields, I'm talking about the house.
Yeah, for the house?
Yeah. It's going to be pretty close.
It'd be close, because it depends on which way you come, yeah. If you take the one from behind the school, you could probably come up and tap into like the gardens and stuff, and everything would be potable. Because they have issues with the community garden where they can't eat stuff right out of the garden. They have to take it home, clean it. It's not sanitary for them to eat. It's just what it is. It's the water we have.
That's what I'm saying is if we can use that well somewhere and then possibly use the other one.
But that well maybe take care of the house, but I don't see that going all the way down to the soccer field.
Whereas the other one you're talking about could come up.
It's right at the soccer field, yeah. Well, the other one behind the pole barn, it would just come up behind, like down the road by the house. So you'd still need to feed it down to the soccer field area.
It sounds like we need some money for a consultant to come in and sort of say, here's what you could or couldn't do as far as water goes to meet those needs. If Public Works thinks that they can do that, then it's great.
Most of your existing wells that are drilled are not going to, they haven't been permitted correctly. Like the one you're talking about. It didn't start off with BDA.
Just like the sheriff's department.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're going to run into the same issues.
And it's going to take you a year to get that straight.
So you've got to start it from scratch.
Yeah.
So we need a plan. Let's put that on the list.
But I do get complaints a lot from bikers that they can't get potable water in the park if we're not open during the day. Because to come in the evening, is, you know, if you're biking down the road,
can we make phase one of the spray run basically a water study and put it into this year? Is that allowable?
From a CIP,
I wouldn't even call it phase one for the water park.
We're
doing a water study of Pleasant Grove so that we can eventually find water sources for the house and for the field.
Yeah, I mean, what we could do, if the board wants to add, I'm not sure how do you want to take it up from a CIP standpoint?
Yeah.
From
like 50 grand is a minimum, right? I don't know. I mean, it seems like that's...
Well, we've got 50 grand sitting here, so...
Yeah, yeah. I mean, with between the buses and the other stuff we've got...
No, I'm talking about the old 50 grand.
But I think they're going to use...
Oh, well, you're going to...
He said he was going to use that for the new...
No. I think what we're saying is the 50 grand that's there for the sheriff's office project maybe is not needed, so maybe we can convert that money into...
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
A different water study.
Right. None does not sound in any way, shape, or form that even if we said let's do a spray ground,
I can't do it until you get water.
So you're not going to get that tonight.
Water has to come before.
It'll be 2 years probably.
That's part
would be my guess.
I was just thinking with the kids getting out of school.
It'd be a great addition to the park. Like it would bring people from outside the county to our park. It'd be great.
So maybe why don't we do this if within the next couple meetings, if we have a better idea what the sheriff's office project is going to look like, and you know, if it doesn't cost much money, then we can come back to the board for a proposal for a kind of a master water study for Pleasant Grove.
We can do that.
Yeah.
And then this way we can get the answers.
To me, that sounds like a more intelligent approach.
Yeah.
Yeah. Get the horse first.
I mean, it needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get the water force.
The difference.
Then get the horse to the water.
But for when we have county fair and events like that, I have vendors that have to bring in their own water because I can't supply them water.
And that's
so you just look at some of the stuff that we have to do to get around that we don't have potable water.
Horses riding back there. You got mountain bike riders. You got all kinds of people. You got golfers.
Yep.
Kids,
but like you said, if you can bring it up by the pole barn and bring it up by where all your vendors are, then you can put...
Because, I mean, we have spigots back there, too. We have them everywhere, and they all have a sign that says no potable water. I think there's 18 of those in the garden alone.
I know what's wrong with me. So you tell me the little thing back there in the bag is non-potable?
And you've been drinking?
No, yes.
People drink them all the time. They said people
been drinking it, but I spent a lot of quality time back there in a Dunkin' booth.
Right.
Multiple times.
That's right.
I get fairly wet when I'm doing that.
Yeah.
And that's what they filled the water with.
I remember they like cutting the hose. nose on me, that stuff cold when it comes in there.
So it sounds like we probably need to hold on the spray ground park. So to go back to the schools, so we can do one of two things. We can either make some moves on the funds here, or we can just leave it right there. We can have them, the school.
They can come back to us and tell us.
We can have them come to us.
He specifically said he would rather see money for that, but I don't know what the amount was, but $300,000 extra.
Why don't we put $300,000 up there in the technology line and let them come back and explain to us why it has to be $300,000? A contractor that can do it for $150,000.
They can come back to us. We don't have to make this change today.
You don't.
They can come back to us next week.
If this is the only change left in the budget, this change flip-flopping between these two things is an easy thing on the fly.
Right.
We could have dropped it $34,257.
Fund balance.
Yeah, it's fund balance, yeah.
Okay, that's right. That's right. This is the one we just passed.
What else? Just to scroll down real quickly and see if there's anything.
This is at the very bottom. So yeah. This is just the schools.
Scroll up. That's okay.
Public safety, everything was funded. Some things were cut out of public works. And then that's it.
I got a question.
Talking about
I got it. A question, and this one's going to be with the sheriff. And this is probably the wrong time to ask you, but I'll forget because I've been drinking that non-potable water.
Major Wells says that's why he lost his hair. Several years before we got the sun.
Well, he's a runner, too. He runs a lot of runners.
I know, all the time. But this one's also with you. If the lake does what they're, I don't know, what they're talking about with the security force rather than their police department, will that have an effect on y'all?
Well, we don't know until they do it. I would think it would probably have some effect on us. If it's a hybrid, they're talking about a hybrid program.
I think that's what they approved was a hybrid.
Right. So does that mean they're going to keep the full staffing of law enforcement or not? That, you know, that's the part they have to work all that out.
Okay. And believe it or not, this was a conversation I had with two of the kids when we were riding around this morning. They were like, Coach, you hear about what they're going to do with the security forces at the lake? I was like, yeah. Well, no, that wasn't what they're talking about. Well, does that mean your dad just going to start coming through?
We've got a really good working relationship, and we've had several meetings, and I met the other day with the general manager again, and he kind of ran over everything, what they were wanting to do, and you know, we're going to, I think what they're wanting to do is going to be a great fresh start to once they get their person who's going to be in charge, then we can all sit down and work out from scratch who's going to do what, and who's responsible for what and such. And I think it's a good opportunity for to get everything worked out and everybody's on the same page. Yeah. And
you know what I'm thinking about? Is this going to mean that we need to hire additional deputies? I'm thinking about this from budget.
Well, we definitely need what we're getting this year, and depending on the changes for next year, we're going to continue growing. What we're going to do also is we're trying to fit in. We have never done a command staff retreat. We're going to do a day or two, and I've tasked everybody with a mission. In their division to come up with a 5 and 10 year plan.
I hear taking the world and taking your wife is a good plan.
And you know, and as well as you know, built you know where we right now we're shuffling people around trying to have office space and cramming several people in one office.
So, yeah, you're playing you know, too small already.
Yes, ma'am. We kind of outgrown that building.
We just got a warm, Miss Booker.
Louisiana has a habit of always putting things up too small.
Right. They should put a basement in there when they built it. That would have answered all the questions.
I've got a great picture for a retreat of an amphitheater that faces the ocean when we were leaving on the ship out of the Dominican Republic.
But anyway, we will do that, and we will come back to the board and give you an insight as to what we feel like the future holds. And the more the county continues to grow, and I can tell you honestly, the other night, we were so busy
the court had issued a habeas on someone who wanted to try to serve it immediately. We couldn't even do it. We had to ask state police to go do it. That we were, our manpower stretched so thin with the amount of calls that we had. So things have been on the uptick a little bit, and it seems like it all comes at one time. But you know, we're not going to ask for anything that we don't need. So, yeah. Any other questions?
No, that's the only thing I had. We're not sorry.
No, so I was mentioning amphitheaters, not an amphitheater, yeah. Two quick questions with regard to Pleasant Grove. One, is there a current plan, or have we funded putting a roof onto the little theater there, and have we addressed the electrical issues
but
there?
But the problem is, the direction of the theater, according to Mr. Spitzer, is the wrong direction. Even a roof, it'll keep you dry, but it won't keep the sun from melting equipment.
Correct.
In the right ballpark?
Correct. That's what I've been told.
Tent thing in there that accomplishes that? Like, you know, a permanent tent structure that does that?
I would have to look into that. But what I've been told, I don't think you would be able to see the performers. Is how low you'd have to get that tent down for the people up on the hill.
Is it?
If that makes sense. Because when I had to do it at the Farm Museum, I was only 3 or 4 feet off the ground with my tent. To where they couldn't bake their equipment.
I remember when we did the grand opening there.
I had to remember how to drop
right
that
into the sun.
Well, I can tell you that stage is built for a NASA space shuttle to launch on. I mean,
can't be moved.
The number of posts that are in the ground that thing can handle, it is massive.
I'm working on one in the front of the park, in front of the house, and I'm hoping to have maybe an Eagle Scout do this thing.
Well, the one thing that I've talked about, and I don't know, we've got to go in there and study what direction. I always thought about where we park. She could put a stage in the bottom and treat that as a big bowl as an amphitheater.
Oh, okay. You're talking out front.
Almost where we shoot the handicap hunt, where we do the handicap hunt across from the farm, right behind the Farm Museum, across from the Summer Kitchen.
Oh,
that's an amphitheater. That would be a good space.
Okay. I'm thinking big. I'm literally thinking about in the beginning when we had COVID, we were trying to come up with a graduation where you sit in your cars.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why don't we build a small stage down there in the bottom where you park, in the front, to the right.
I park a lot of cars out there, and that could cause a lot of problems.
Well, that's the only thing I thought about.
That's why I would try to move it somewhere different.
Well, I know where you're talking about. You're talking about down in the bottom behind the Farm Museum.
That's behind our rodeo area. Where our rodeo area
but
is.
But below,
behind that, yeah.
In that bottom right there.
Where they could be up on the rodeo area looking down.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's the spot.
I think our best theater stand.
But the other thing with the current theater, too, was electrical. I mean, last time I saw some folks performing there, it was blowing a fuse like every 30 minutes they were blowing a fuse.
I don't know if we've had that issue in a long time. Okay. Yeah. We have a power box down there and plenty
of. They were using that power box.
And they have plenty of plugs on the stage now. I don't know if they had that when that was going.
Was that one of our.
But we've never had it.
Yeah, it was a rock and roll band, but it was like an event. It was something, you know.
Do you know how long ago?
We had several performers.
Was this not probably Field Day? When there was like a barbecue band?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
we've upgraded that stuff.
Okay, so that's been upgraded because that would be.
There haven't been any really big events back there in quite some time.
It's going to change.
How do we get to back there? Fridays after 5 in Pleasant Grove. Well, you can't do it if you don't have water.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can't do it if you don't have potable water, right? Yeah. You know? Can't do it if your bands aren't going to show up if every time they play it blows.
Well, again, Mr. Spitzer has some money that we were talking about to build a stage in kind of the front bowl area in front of the house. That's where he has.
How much for the cemetery? It's behind the cemetery in the bottom.
Cemetery?
Behind the cemetery in the bottom.
To the right. Yeah.
Between the house and the cemetery?
Yeah.
And then there's a bowl that goes up. If you go to our county fair, it's where we have our stage at the county fair.
Yep.
So I'm looking to do like a 20 by 20 stage down there.
You're going
to
call it the Grateful Dead Theater?
That'd be awesome, yeah. But
well, how big is the one in the back?
30 by 30, I think.
I mean, I go big or go home. No.
We don't need anything bigger than 20 by 20. That's what we rent for our county fair, and everybody that performs on that.
Okay.
That's plenty. We have drums. You know, we have everything. We have a whole ensemble
out
there.
And you got shade.
And there's shade. And we were able to put a tent, and the sun's behind you. Mm-hmm. When you're looking.
Could we be planting trees to provide shade down by that theater?
No.
We could, but it blocks your view. It'll block somebody's view of you know, trees block views. So if you do put it, you'd have to put it in front of the stage for the sun, but it blocks somebody's view. And personally,
sitting up in front of the house and looking down at it?
No, he's talking about the back, correct? The stage.
Well, I don't
back.
Know what the sun problem is there. So
no, in the front, we don't have a sun problem. We won't have a sun problem with that.
No, not the front theater. I'm just talking. So you're basically saying the back theater isn't worth putting any money into, is what I hear you saying right now.
Yeah, what I'm saying, I probably wouldn't put the stage back there in the beginning.
I don't know why it was put there.
I don't either. That was before me.
What
before
are we
I became director.
Accomplish?
Huh?
I'm confused of what we're
trying to make Pleasant Grove a better experience for performances and things along those lines.
I think what I'm hearing is any money being pulled from the bus money to go to other things?
That's what I was looking at. Yeah, that's why I was starting that down that thing and was just asking these questions on that in terms of, you know, what are we doing to improve Pleasant Grove? You know, that's kind of one of my objectives there. Is
the infrastructure.
About the backstage? I mean, it's like you've been to a ball field and you've stood at home plate and you've tried to hit and you're looking dead into the sun trying to hit. And it just doesn't. And that's exactly what this is.
That's
like
what the performance should be looking at.
Looking into the sun, the softball's getting hit at you and you're just going to die.
I'm just, since it's coming up now, I'm just trying to figure out how we get into
this. I'm trying to request Chris now.
Yeah, no, that's it. I mean, unless somebody else. That was just a question. That was my last question.
Let's get to a conclusion.
The one thing about putting it up
to
the
house.
The one thing about putting it up to the house is it's. Then you got everything up there.
Right.
And that's where we want to get water to. So, you know, that's the other good thing about if you put it up there, although we probably should look. Make sure it doesn't interrupt anything.
There won't be pole barns there, and you have people that use a pole barn, and then they go down.
They can use the stage and that kind of stuff. So
I move that we close this conversation.
I'll walk away.
I want to go through every line.
Mr. Chair.
All right. Any other questions from the board about the budget?
No.
All right.
Not saying words.
Go ahead, Mr. O'Brien.
Marsha Bidger.
How did you take so long? All right, motion made by Mr. O'Brien, seconded by Ms. Booker. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Chair votes aye. We are adjourned.
All right.